TGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 505, recorded on June 14th, 2018, and also the 338th episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am Jonah Falcon.
I am TJ Denzer.
I am Scott Dirk.
And the TD Gaming Podcast focuses on E3, because that's all we're going to be talking about this week. It is directly after E3 just stopped about an hour ago. And we're just basically going to discuss it. Now, unfortunately, TJ couldn't make it, because last year we just hung out in Devolver Digital's space, and TJ drank a few beers while we discussed what we saw at E3, but he couldn't make it this year. Maybe next year, because that's far more preferable to doing it like this. I prefer that kind of E3 recap.
Yeah, I wish I could have made it this year. I got a new job, and it looked like I was going to be on my way out there, but then they decided, we don't need to be there this year for some reason, despite the fact that we cover esports, and there was a ton of it out there.
Oh, yeah, there was a lot of esports on the show floor, which I didn't really do much of. But yeah, I mean, they had several things going there, including a professional Super Smash Brothers competition going there too. They had the non-professional and the professional Super All-Star, whatever. The game in which Nintendo characters beat each other up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Smash Brothers.
Yeah. So yeah, they had a professional tournament for that too. And they had an entire section roped off for esports as well. So yeah, that's baffling.
I know. It's everybody was like confused, but this was the biggest year for esports ever. And I, to a degree, my theory on it, and I know that not a lot of journalists are gonna like this. They're trying to cater to a public crowd, and that's really what it comes down to. This is the second year that they've opened the floor to the public. And they're trying to give people a little bit more bang for their buck.
I don't know. Anyways, so first things first about this podcast is we're going to discuss the press briefings. And even though EA went first, I'm going to start with Microsoft. And this is the time in which I get to give TJ a little bit of a raised eyebrow. Because let's go back to last year. Last year, me and TJ actually attended the PC Gaming Show, and one of his favorite games there was a little Zelda-type game called Tunic, and he decided to compare it to Super Lucky's Tale. So, you know, because it was the better Fox game. And, you know, I actually enjoyed Super Lucky's Tale. It was actually a very good Microsoft version of Mario Odyssey, to tell you the truth. And, you know, it's everything that I think Yooka-Laylee should have been. It was more Banjo-Kazooie than Banjo-Kazooie was. It was so rare, it's not even funny. But anyways, one of the games that Microsoft decided to show off at their press conference was the announcement that Tunic would be coming to Xbox One.
And I love the look of that game. It's so colorful and so peaceful looking, and so it looks very novel and very fun.
And it looks like it's actually going to be a Zelda game, the way the Zelda game used to be. Because, hey, look, you know, Breath of the Wild, that's fine, you know. But sometimes people just want to have that top-down sort of thing going on.
I do enjoy top-down more, and I know there are a lot of people who get motion sickness who would also appreciate top-down or side-scrollers or anything other than another 3D game. And the only similarity between Tunic and Lucky Foxtail is the fox character.
It was a joke by TJ. But you know the funny thing is that Microsoft was listening to it and said, you know what, TJ likes that fox character so much more than Super Lucky's Tale. We're gonna get it for the Xbox One. Now for those of you out there, don't worry, it's still coming out for PC. So if you don't own an Xbox One, you'll be able to play it. So I imagine a lot of people are gonna buy it off Steam. It seems like one of those games that just reeks like it's going to have a huge fan base.
Oh yeah, I think so. It looks a lot of fun, and I'm looking forward to it as well. It does harken back to the kind of Zelda like games. I'm not sure what kind of adventure, I guess, is the genre.
Here's the thing.
That would be.
It's funny that Zelda was the first open world RPG, except just from a top down view, sort of kinda. Mm-hmm. You know, It's an exploratory, puzzle-based RPG, which is basically what Zelda was.
Mm-hmm. And like, there was a time when there were a lot of Zelda clones running around, especially when the first games came out and into Super Nintendo. There was a bunch of games that tried to mimic that. There was still some.
I don't remember any of them, so it must have failed horribly.
Oh man, Alundra is awesome. Alundra was on PS1, and I like it more than I like most of the early Zelda games. But yeah, you don't see those much anymore. And so Tunic is sort of a neat little return to that style of game. And it's cool to see someone do that that isn't Nintendo.
And you know what's funny is that one of the main criticisms about Microsoft, and also Sony to a certain extent, but not to the same extent, is that a lot of the games that they show at their, for the most part, at their conference, tend to run the same. Same with Sony. You know, Dark, you know, so last year Sony was, look how graphic and gory we can be. That translates as art, right? And Microsoft, yeah, we're dark and gritty. And Nintendo was happy. And people liked Nintendo's conference because it was happy. It wasn't such a... So a lot of what Microsoft did during this was have a lot of brightness, and Tunic, I think, was one of it, you know? Mm-hmm. It was just like, they're not afraid to have something that's, you know, people aren't going to say, oh, that sucks, it's not dark and gory and graphics look cheap. No, people responded to it.
Yeah.
Your dog.
Yes. I thought, the game is beautiful, and there was a lot of dark and weird games and tones, not just at Microsoft, but at Sony as well. And I don't think I saw the Microsoft EA one, but I definitely saw the Sony one, and there was just a lot of dark, it seemed like.
Well, we'll get to Sony later.
Yeah.
So the other thing is maybe you guys didn't know, I was talking to TJ on Skype during the day of the Microsoft conference, and I was, you know what I told him? This needs more Terry Crews. Oh, I said it on Twitter, you know. Microsoft press conference needs more Terry Crews, and fortunately they gave it to us with Crackdown 3. Now, what I did not expect was that it would actually be beaten in the what the fuck, holy shit, what's going on here? Something actually outmanaged it, out Terry Crews. But before we get to it, what did you think of what you saw from Crackdown? I mean, it was basically what to be expected from Crackdown 3. I mean, it's, you know, cel-shaded, but the thing is that the thing I was disappointed that they did not show, which is something they've been promising, is that the fact that everything in Crackdown 3 is destructible. Everything. And I'm hoping they'll show that, you know, in later gameplay videos.
I really like it. It makes me think of Red Faction Guerrillas. And
you know, the best part is that they actually gave it a release date of February 2019. So at least we know it's coming out.
Yeah, for sure. And like I said, it reminds me of Red Faction Guerrillas in the best sort of ways. Just being able to destroy everything is a problem. Even the stuff that we did see destroyed in the trailer was fun to watch, and it'll be interesting to, because it's almost like if you took the destructibility of Red Faction Guerrillas and mixed it with just the over the top player ability of oh god, what's that game with the,
I don't know. Actually, a lot of people considered Crackdown, the first Crackdown, to be the spiritual successor to The Incredible Hulk. That game, remember, in which you leapt around and destroyed stuff.
Yeah, I can see that. That sounds fun.
I do remember that Ori and the Will of the Wisps was shown on the...
Yes, I will get to that in a moment, because first I want to go from Crackdown 3... to the game that made people just go friggin' nuts in the audience, because it was sort of like, what? Wait, what? What? And, of course, that's Jump Force. First, you know, Naruto pops up, and he's, okay, it's a Naruto. And then, oh, wait a minute. Is that One Piece? Holy shit, is that Goku? And then other characters from Shonen Jump just pop up everywhere, and it's like, it's just completely and utter bonkers, and it was not expected at all. It was just like, this trailer was insanity.
It feels like the Kingdom Hearts for anime fans.
Well, here's the thing, you know, actually, that a game of that type had come out in Japan before, but it never came to America, and it was for a handheld. Here,
no surprise.
You have, you know, picture, you know, cell perfect characters all doing their thing. Now, they actually had it playable at E3, and one of the things was I was wondering, Namco's sort of, you know, taking the piss out a little from Dragon Ball FighterZ Z, but it's not because it's not. See, here's the thing, Dragon Ball Fighters or Fighter Z, whatever, is on a 2D plane like Street Fighter, or you know, Jump Force is actually on an open, you know, on a 3D open terrain, sort of like Fury. So you have that going for it. So it's a different type of fighting game.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. I know you follow Dragon Ball Z and One Piece and Naruto much more than I do. I did not recognize the two characters at the end of the trailer. Maybe you did?
The ones at the very end of the trailer were from Death Note. Basically, the human has a notebook that he can write names of people in, and in 30 seconds or less, they die. So that's a weird sort of inclusion. yeah, it was a weird thing to see Light Yagami from Death Note, and that other thing was basically the Grim Reaper that follows him around.
I mean, everybody was going, "Oh shit!" at the end of the trailer. I don't read much. You know, I know enough to recognize One Piece, Naruto, and Dragon Ball Z, right? But not everything. So let's get to Kingdom Hearts. Now, they showed off Kingdom Hearts, and actually I was watching, they also had it playable on the floor as well, and they had some things that interested me. So you wanted to talk about Kingdom Hearts, Scott.
Yeah, I wished that Paul was here so he could explain the story to me, because I'm completely lost in what's going on, and it looks like they're throwing in everything that they possibly can with Elsa,
yeah,
and Rapunzel and just Monsters Inc. And it's like
they also had Wreck-It Ralph.
Yeah, Wreck-It Ralph. And it just feels like you have this story going on, and then you're throwing all this extra stuff in that doesn't really look like it's adding to the plot.
It's actually a crossover with known Square Enix characters interacting with Disney characters, and they go into the Disney world. I mean, I think Kingdom Hearts 2 had Tron in it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And you also have Captain Jack Sparrow as, mm-hmm, you know, and since he's live action, he actually appears much like Johnny Depp instead of, you know. So they follow the way it's done precisely, you know? So you have all these clashing styles, but since they all clash, they sort of work together. One of the good things is that they were re-releasing, I don't know when, but Kingdom Hearts 1 and 2 for all consoles, I think later this year. I know they're supposed to re-release remastered versions of those things. So if you don't know Kingdom Hearts, you can just play. But here's the problem is that I know that Paul's complaint about Kingdom Hearts 2 was that it was basically a rehash of Kingdom Hearts 1. So, you know, it's an action JRPG. I mean, you've seen them before, you know, in which you have turn-based and action at the same time. You know, and you really have to be a fan of the Disney properties to really enjoy it.
I don't even know that that helps. There are two mainline Kingdom Hearts games, and then there are like eight
Nintendo
spin-offs.
DS games, yeah, which just
Nintendo DS, PSP, just all sorts of. There's mobile games, and all of them have a piece of the story. So. Yeah, it's even if Paul was here to explain it to you, Scott, I guarantee you by the end of it, you'd be just as much, if not more, confused than you were when we started.
Yeah, I think it's a bad idea to keep throwing in more and more characters. It just feels like, hey, look, we got Wreck-It Ralph. Okay, now Wreck-It
Ralph. Well, here's the thing. Two things. One, it's on a new console now, right?
Yeah.
And they're probably going to make it very new person friendly, you know, as a jumping in point. So I think Kingdom Hearts 3 will at least be a jumping in point for new people, right? And two, it's basically they enter the world and they go through that themed world for a bit with those characters.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like you're introduced with the characters and they stick around. No, you're just going to Elsa's world and, you know, and maybe someone might accompany you. You know, because the entire point is to see characters that normally would never interact. But yeah, you only have to worry about Sora and Goofy and Donald.
That's what I noticed in the cutscenes.
Yeah, the dealio with the Disney worlds is that you go in there, there's a problem like caused by the Heartless, and you work with the Disney characters to solve it. That's the basic premise of visiting worlds in Kingdom Hearts.
Yeah, basically you have Sora, Donald, and Goofy, and they have guest fighters with them, you know, from whatever.
Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, the real complicated part is when you start dealing with the Kingdom Hearts characters themselves, and they go all like there's clones and organizations and shadow forces, and this guy was dead, but he's not dead because he inhabited someone else, and because he's a clone of this other thing. This other thing is not him, but it is him, but it isn't him. And yeah. <Okay.
laughs> Now we have to talk about. Let's move on. We have to talk about last week's podcast. And one of the things we noticed was Capcom registered Devil May Cry 5, right? And you knew that Devil May Cry 5 was going to come out at sooner a point. But the big surprise is that Microsoft showed it off. And that was a running theme of the Microsoft press conference, was taking the piss out of Sony. Because all the games that they were showing were games that Sony would normally show.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and Devil May Cry 5 was one of it. And everybody ate up Devil May Cry 5 a lot. You know, and here's the thing. A lot of people didn't like DMC because, you know, it was basically a reboot, and they didn't really like the main character. But what I'm thinking is, you know, at least Devil May Cry 5 is going to take the gameplay mechanics from DMC and use them for that. You know, so were you happy to see Dante again?
I was happy to see Nero again. No, but like
Dante and Nero, yeah. I mean, like, a lot of my gay friends were swooning over Dante.
A lot of people were salty over like the idea that, because like a lot of people's initial reaction was, oh no, it's DMC Dante. It's like, nope, that's just Nero.
Yeah.
But the moment he rubbed his sword, I'm like, yay! I love Nero. He's a good character, and he has mechanics that are just completely different from Dante. You know, I was telling my friend, you can only do the million stab with Dante a million times before it gets boring. So it's nice to have Nero in there to change things up and make them interesting and out of the ordinary.
You know what I would really love? I'm really hoping that they have a Bayonetta cameo.
That would be interesting.
Here's the thing. Devil May Cry is great, but I'm still a full hard-on... I shouldn't say that. A full, diehard fan of Bayonetta. I prefer Bayonetta as a character to Dante and Nero. And while Bayonetta, there's less difference between Bayonetta and Jean than Dante and Nero, I still like her attitude, you know? She's like, yeah, I'm sexy, but guess what? Talk to the fist, you know? She considers fighting foreplay.
Dante's looking like Devil Grandpa, what with finally growing facial hair for the first time in 2 decades.
Yeah.
Well.
You know, so let's talk about what Scott wanted to talk about, and that is the new Ori game, Ori and the Will of the Wisps, which they also had playable on the show floor, and it was gorgeous.
Very beautiful. It's surprising me they made it even more beautiful than the Blind Forest, and it looks like they stepped it up, and looking forward to this. You have a little owl friend, it looks like, and you're going on another adventure. I really like this style game, the more Metroidvania-like games. Definitely like those.
Yeah. How about you, TJ? Did you enjoy the first Ori game?
Absolutely. It's my favorite. It's one of my favorite video game soundtracks of all time. Mm. I'll buy that second game, even just to have the CD.
Right. And one of the good things is that it is Xbox Anywhere, so if you get it on Xbox One or Windows 10, you have it for the other platform.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I really like that program, by the way. So let's talk about Nier Automata, and that rumor was proven true. And, one of the things about a console exclusive, and we can think about No Man's Sky this way too, is that at least when the console that didn't get it for a year or two gets it, they usually get all the DLC included and all the problems with it gone, you know, all the patches. Because a lot, you know, they talked about Nier Automata, and they took out some of the stuff and tweaked some of the stuff that was problematic with Nier. And I know you loved Nier Automata, and you raved, and it was your best score of the year, TJ.
It's definitely an interesting game. I'm not in love with it as much as some people I know. I know people that swear by that game to be the most compelling and intriguing story of 2016.
Oh, yeah. They both look like they're blindfolded, and they lift their blindfolds when they have a revelatory moment. Wow, that's really some deep symbolism, huh?
I mean... It's one of those things that, like, you have to play. Well, the problem with it, as far as I'm concerned...
Do you consider it Dragon Card 3?
to a certain degree. It's in the same... No, it's Nier. It's in the same universe as the original Nier.
Hmm. I still haven't played it, so... I mean, I know enough about it, but I haven't actually played it, so I don't know the ending. Actually, let me put it this way. I don't know the three endings.
Yeah, because you have to play through the game apparently three times.
To get the actual ending.
Uh-huh. Which, I mean, meh. That's one thing I don't like about it, is if I have to play the game, your game three times before I understand what's happening, I don't know. I should want to, not because I have to.
So,
sure enough.
Yeah. So shall we talk about the other remastered game, Tales of Vesperia Definitive Edition?
I don't have anything to say on this one. What about you, Scott?
Well, here's the thing. It's the 10th anniversary version, and it has all the DLC ever included. It actually adds some new plot elements and stuff like that, so you're actually getting a little bit more. I only played one of the Tales games, and that was the one that was exclusive for a short time for the Xbox 360.
Was that one of the ones that hasn't been released yet on Steam?
No, they did release it on Steam, but it was fucking buggy as hell, if you remember. Almost unplayable. Well,
certainly hope that this is a playable, much better version.
You would hope so if it's the 10th anniversary edition.
Yeah.
You know? And they did up the graphics quite a bit.
That's good. Mostly I want it to work. so I look forward to it if it works. I don't think I've played that one at all, so it would be nice just to get a good, decent version of it and not have to worry about a buggy one.
So, shall we talk about the last Japanese-oriented game, and that is Sekiro: Shadows Die Twice. This is coming from Activision.
And I definitely like. I love ninja games. I love the setting.
Oh, should I mention it's also by From Software? We should say that right off the top.
Yeah, but it looks great. It's like a Japanese Dark Souls. Some people are calling it.
Well, I think they're saying that because it's from Software, but I don't see Dark Souls at all. I think you're right. I think I see more Ninja Gaiden, and you know, which was anybody who played the original Ninja Gaiden that was on the Xbox 360. You know, it finally made it to the PlayStation 3 a bit later. It on the easy mode, it was hard.
Right.
And on the hardest level, it was, yeah, you have to be good to get even past two levels.
Yeah, it's very dark and gritty, and I can kind of see why some people say Dark Souls, and I think it's more of the tone than anything else. But it is a gorgeous game, and there's stealth elements and... Looks like a good story, and just it looks like a fun game to play. I definitely look forward to that one.
Yeah, but before you say anything, TJ, I just want to say, just because it's from Software, you know, they did other stuff than Dark Souls. You know?
Yeah.
It's what they're famous for, and I think Bloodborne 2 is going to be the last of their Dark Souls-type stuff in a long while.
It doesn't really look like not Dark Souls to me. In fact, as I was watching it, the way it came off to me was... It was From Software saying, "Oh yeah, Neo. Oh yeah, Team Ninja. You're gonna go ahead and do an Asian Dark Souls. Okay, we got your Asian Dark Souls. Here's Sekiro."
Yeah, but I just think it's more Ninja Gaiden than it is Dark Souls.
There's actually not much. I mean, Team Ninja is the guys who did Ninja Gaiden, and it comes through in Neo. And I would say that it's not that far of a difference between the two. Ninja Gaiden is more stylish, but it's still just as hateful.
I actually prefer Ninja Gaiden to God of War, because at least the game sort of acknowledges that what you're doing is evil. And it says, but you are evil, so go at it. So let's take a complete 180 and talk about Session, because one of the things that has been really lacking in console games for a while now is a good skateboarding game. And the last one that was out there was Skate 3. So are you interested in Session, which is going to be one of the skateboard sims? It's not going to be like Tony Hawk. You know, it's going to be more like Skate, because with Sessions, you're going to have the left analog and the right analog are going to be each individual foot. So you can make, you know, flips and all that stuff by moving your feet.
I want to know how many people – you were in the theater, right?
Yeah.
I want to know how many people yelled, Skate 4, when that trailer came up.
No,
and how
actually,
disappointed they were.
The crowd was intrigued, but it wasn't like, fuck yeah. It was more like a polite applause. Like, yeah, we're going to get some skateboarding.
Do you know how many people have been asking for Skate 4 and how disappointed they were on my timeline when it turned out to be Session instead?
You know, the thing is that, you know what would have made the crowd go nuts, actually? If they had announced a new Jet Grind Radio game. That would have made the entire audience explode. That would have made me explode, anyway.
I think that's true. I just also think that releasing any skateboard game and not doing Skate 4 is like travesty right now.
Yeah. Now, we're gonna hold off on Battlefield 5, and we're gonna hold off on Fallout 76, and we're gonna hold off on Cyberpunk 2077 for the moment. I just want to say that I know there's a lot of people who are pleased that Cuphead is getting a nice meaty DLC.
I saw that. That'll look very cool.
And they're adding a new character, Miss Chalice.
Yep.
Miss Chalice is going to be fun to play.
That's going to be awesome. So will it be a three-player game now? Or just two-player?
Actually, I don't know. It could be. I mean, I hope that's what it means. I mean, I just think it's a playable character with a new skin. But hey, if it means you can have three players playing at once, hey, more the merrier.
Yes.
I'm just, you know, I'm wondering if this is sort of like a holding pattern for the next Cuphead game, though, the next full Cuphead game. And like I said last week, I hope they make it more of a run-and-gun game, you know, in the style of Contra than just, you know, mostly
boss battles.
Bosses.
I imagine that Cuphead has to take ridiculous amounts of time to animate to get those characters right and get all that slapstick style, like rubber band animation going and looking proper.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, at least they already have Cuphead and Bugman, you know, animated down so they can reuse them. But yeah, I mean, the thing about Cuphead is, and for those of you who haven't, for the one or two people out there who haven't actually seen Cuphead yet, is that the backgrounds are just as animated as the foregrounds.
There's a lot going on the screen. It can get you very easily distracted.
Anybody who's not playing is usually having more fun because they're seeing a lot more. Because Cuphead, for those you don't know, for the one or two people who don't know, is extremely difficult. You know, you really have to concentrate when you're playing Cuphead. You can't afford to be distracted.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So, let's talk about Dying Light 2, and the one thing that I have to note about it is that Chris Avellone was introducing it, and you know Chris Avellone, he's from Obsidian, so they're definitely going with, and this is what I love about it, is that they're definitely going with your decisions affect the rest of the game and the rest of the story, which I like, which is, you know, it's something you see a lot of in RPGs and adventure games. It's not something you really see in action games, you know, mm-hmm. And Dying Light was a great first-person parkour zombie hunter, but it looks like they're really going for the night and day, and you're not going to see many zombies during the day. It seems like they're going to be relegated to the nighttime now.
That's interesting. Well, change up the mechanics and, you know, at least do something different with it. It won't be just a horde of zombies. You'll have other stuff you can do during the day, and you have to get back to nighttime. Back to your base before nighttime, it seems like, then.
So, yeah, did you enjoy Dying Light, Scott, TJ?
Yes, of course I did.
Of course, I don't know.
So I've always liked Dying Light. It's very cool. I love the stylish movement in that game, and I love the survival mechanics. Plus, they just added so much content to that game. They had DLC for Dying Light that was just as big, if not bigger, than the vanilla game.
What was the name of the quote unquote DLC, which was actually a standalone game that included Dying Light? So it was sort of like a master edition version of it. I'm trying to remember the name of the expansion, but yeah, it added an expansion that was 133% the size of the original game.
That was The Following.
Yeah, I mean that was it added a game plus a third of size to the original game.
And like even according to a few of my friends who are playing the game out there at E3, they've added 50 more moves, like 54 contextual moves.
I didn't get to play it, but I'm not surprised.
And we saw it during Dying Light 2, or at least I saw it because I know what I'm looking for from Dying Light 1. Uh-huh. It straight up doesn't look that far removed from Mirror's Edge, but with some gritty combat to it.
It's always been Mirror's Edge with zombies. And you know, the thing is that I'd love to see is if Faith comes into the game somehow. I wonder how her runner's vision would happen in that kind of world.
That would be some hella good DLC.
Yeah.
But, No, I think it's great. I think it's the more context you add to the running, the better Dying Light becomes, because that's the strength of it, is the movement.
Yeah. So we can talk briefly about The Division 2, and one of the things that I noticed about it, and I guess we're going to be talking about it more in The Division thing, so I shouldn't have brought it up, but I will say, you know, they changed the story because one of the criticisms of The Division is that you weren't a good guy in that game. The people you were hunting were survivors, you know, and they weren't evil. They were just, you know, and your job was to, hey, you know, they have stuff we want. Let's take it. And this was coming from the government. So now they flipped it, and now you're fighting against the evil government. You know, you're fighting against President Evil now, which I think that was a direct response to the criticism about the ethics of The Division.
I looked away for some part during that trailer, but I really do hope that there is a character named President Evil. it looks good. I like it looks like they're trying to address a lot of the problems that they had with the first one.
Yeah, where it looked better too. It looked less boring.
Mm-hmm. I mean, Frosted New York, you can only do so much with winter, you know?
Hey, but Frosted DC.
Yeah.
Let's just hope they took out 100% of the boring.
How funny is it when you get players in a trailer LARPing during
the... Yeah, that always bugged me. They did that in the first one, too. It was just like, stop it. Stop.
You know what? That would be funny as hell if you had to LARP or the game auto-detects that you're using regular people speak and just kills you off.
Yeah.
You have to be part of the game. You have to be in the world.
So let's transit from there to talk about We Happy Few, because they debuted it 2 years ago, and they released a demo, and the demo was sort of interesting, and now they released a full trailer, and we're finding out that actually you have to play as three characters. And they're not good guys. They're actually sort of morally ambiguous.
This is the first time... Has there been, like... Okay, so this is the first time I can recall seeing such a thorough story part of We Happy Few. It was procedurally generated before, wasn't it?
Yeah, no. When you had the demo, it was sort of like you're at your desk. You have to refuse to take your happy pill, because if you take the happy pill, the game ends. It's like, okay, you decided just to be happy all the time. But yeah, the other one was sort of like, you know, sort of like an open world game when you got out of your vault. And, you know, you had to craft and you had to talk to people. They included a lot more of the story elements. And, you know, it has a unique look. It's sort of like if Dishonored and Fallout had a weird baby.
Yeah, there was one particular style of game that I was like, what is it? No One Lives Forever. It reminds me of No One Lives Forever mixed with Dishonored.
Well, it does take place in 60s England.
Yeah, I mean, that's it just reminds me of like all that stylized, all that sort of Beatles-esque color and style to it. It has that in droves, and it's sort of...
Also, it's sort of nice to see that not everybody had bought into Joy, the pill that you take. You know,
yeah, you're not the one person
about it.
You're not the one person in the entire city that isn't taking Joy,
or thinks it's ethical. I mean, you know, I mean, I hope it doesn't devolve into Bioshock Infinite, you know, because that story was a morass. I know what he was trying to say in that game, but it's. It's a new story, you know? It's not a recycled story. It's actually something that's kind of new, you know? And it's, you know, and you also have... They didn't really emphasize the dual worlds nature of it when you don't take the Joy or when you do actually take the Joy. You know, because when you take the Joy, everything's... You know, it's sort of like the little sisters in Bioshock 2, how they view the world.
Mm-hmm.
So there's more of that in the game.
I'm interested. Now that it finally has, like, a legitimate story, like, a legitimate context outside of don't take the drugs and survive, I'm more invested.
Unless you're in Australia, then you can't play the game.
Oh.
do you want to talk about the awesome adventures of Captain Spirit? Which, for those who don't know, it takes place in the Life is Strange universe, and it's actually supposed to link Life is Strange 2. But the thing that's unusual about it is that it seems to be a game about growing up, and it has nothing to do with earth-shattering stuff. It seems to be just about a boy with an active imagination who's dealing with an alcoholic father.
Yeah, I mean, wasn't the whole crux of Life is Strange that the girl had time travel powers or something?
Yeah, but this one is just... talking about this kid, you know, and I like that. I mean, I like a slice of life game. Now, it may have been the most depressing game of the past 50 years, but at least that Dragon Cancer wasn't about anything except an actual personal experience that everybody might have.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I like that it's not, the boy could be psychic or have actual powers. I hope not. I just hope it's about him learning to grow up and deal with his alcoholic father. And, of course, they don't seem to have a mother. Oh, no, the mother was separated. That's right.
I think it's odd that they went with that supernatural element for the first Life is Strange, and they sort of haven't returned to it, just for me. Just
because here's the thing. I think everybody responded to the real-life, real-world implications of the game. You know, they found that more interesting than this girl has visions of a future in which a storm wipes out a town or something. You know, having to deal with a creepy stalker teacher, you know, that was more interesting than the town's going to be destroyed by a tornado or waterspout or whatever it was.
I don't know. I like the relationships between all of the X-Men, but it would be kind of weird if you went to another X-Men movie where they just don't have power.
Yeah, but
nobody
this is
has
not
powers.
X-Men. We're not talking about a mutant kid here. We're talking about and like I said, you know, I mean, what was that? The prequel before Life is Strange. I think it was called Before Life is Strange. You know,
Before the Storm.
Before the Storm. You know, I mean, that also just was a character study.
Look, I'm not saying that the slice of life stuff in Life is Strange isn't super awesome and isn't very, very good and that they shouldn't focus on that. I'm just saying it's weird that they did the supernatural thing once and then it's just like, we'll leave that off for the
next.
Were
you thinking about Calvin and Hobbes while watching? Because I kept on thinking about Spaceman Spiff.
Oh, yeah. Especially with the snowmen that he would make into his bad guys and then attack them.
Did you watch the trailer, Scott? Scott's probably asleep.
Ah.
I'm sorry, I was on mute. I'm sorry.
Oh, okay. Did you watch the trailer for the Awesome Adventures of Captain Spirit?
Yes, I did. Oh, yeah, I'm interested in that because that just looks cute and adorable. And, you know, weren't we all little kids that did that? You know, we put on a little towel.
I hope we didn't all have alcoholic fathers. That's the But it's about that relationship, you know.
Well, I guess my dad abandoned me, so maybe this game does relate to me.
Oh, okay. Well, actually, in the game, I believe the mother is separated, if I remember correctly.
Hmm. I just wanted to focus on the power of the imagination and how the kid was just, he go full into these worlds and just imagine great, fantastic things. And that's the sort of thing that I did when I was a kid. I would just imagine aliens and monsters and all sorts of stuff.
Well, yeah, who didn't tie a towel around their neck as a cape?
Yeah. So, yeah, definitely.
So... we don't really have to talk about Shadow of the Tomb Raider. It just looks like more of the same. I mean, she's in a jungle, she's in a tomb, she's gritty determination, and she gets hurt a lot. She must have so many broken bones in her body.
it's a stealth game. Yeah.
You know, I wish they would get away from the first game. You know, I want the cocksure, intelligent Lara from the original games, you know, who is... like, yeah, I've been there, done that, and I'm not always depressed.
Yeah, I mean, how many giant adventures does Laura have to go through before she gets her groove back?
Yeah, I want to see that movie now. How Laura Croft got her groove back. Yeah, I mean, there's not much we can say about it because it looks like more of the same.
Yeah, it looks nice.
It looks nice, but it's more of the same, and I was bored just watching the trailer. I couldn't even bring myself to walk past the big display for it on the floor. It's like, I just couldn't, because there she was, grunting with determination. It's like, okay, thank you. I miss square-boobed Lara.
Who had personality.
Yeah. You know? Anyways, I'm going to talk about Forza Horizon 4. And, you know, I did demo it and here's the thing that really irritated me, by the way. Microsoft's thing was in a separate building, which meant not only did I have to get in line and use for 15 to 20 minutes just to get in, just to do the same old demo, you know, the demos that they have in their thing, but also I had to check back in, you know, I had to go through security twice, one to get in and then one to get back into E3. It was just... I mean, the stuff there was fun, but it wasn't enough to justify having to do that, you know? I get it. You have your own theater, and it's less expensive, but still. I don't know. But Forza Horizon 4, and here's the thing. I'm a motorsport fan, but I will say, you know, I'm actually interested in Forza Horizon because I really didn't like Horizon 2, 1, 2, or 3.
What did you not like about them?
What?
What did you not like about them?
Oh, it was just too open world. You know, it was like Burnout Paradise. And this one, at least the racing was tighter. It wasn't like off-road all the time. So, and the changing seasons mechanic was fun. Let's see. Shall we go with the obvious? Now let's talk about Gears. And I'm going to tell you something. When the Gears logo popped up, people started cheering, and then one of the Funko Pop characters popped out of it. And while they laughed, it was sort of, a lot of people just felt like some of the air had been taken out of their lungs. There is a Gears 5, and there's a Gears Tactics too, which is interesting because that is actually, you know about Final Fantasy Tactics? Well, now you have Gears Tactics, which is interesting.
Yeah. I mean, I'm up for more Halo Wars, but in the Gears universe.
But it's turn-based. It's a turn-based tactics game. It's not an RTS.
Oh. Is it? So, okay, so I must have missed
turn-based.
This one.
It's Final X-Com? Fantasy Tactics, except with Gears characters.
Like straight-up Final Fantasy Tactics, or more like
X-Com? It's turn-based. It's turn-based, and it has the same character-driven storytelling, And
no, but that's what I'm saying.
You can upgrade the weapons, you know, and you have boss battles. But it's, you know, it's a PC game. It's only PC game, and it's a turn-based tactics game. Although, you know, maybe I could think of it more like a little bit of Heroes of Might and Magic tossed in.
Okay. So you wouldn't say XCOM, though?
You know, I haven't played it. That's the thing. It's a tactics game. You know, and it could very well be like XCOM. So if you want to think of it as XCOM in the Gears universe, maybe so. I mean, it's a turn-based PC game, you know, which is a surprising thing for something that's like Gears, right? And by the way, that's what Gears Pop is, the one with Funko Pops, is, but it's for iOS and Android. Now, Gears 5 looks interesting. It, you know, Gears Judgment and people like that, and Gears 4, you know, but at least Gears 5 looks interesting. And it's also being released on Windows at the same time.
That is interesting.
Yeah. And let's talk about Halo. And one thing you have to note is that they're announcing Halo Infinite. And one of the things I noticed also is that it's Windows 10 as well. And there's only two other games that have been Halo games that have been for Windows. Halo 1 and Halo 2, and I'm not including Halo Wars and Halo Wars 2. You know, I'm just talking about the shooters. And, okay, so I have to describe what the stage was like. If you were in the audience, and maybe you saw it on the TV screen, there were like 50 Xbox Ones. But at any time, only 4 people or 5 people were on it, and that was for the Forza demo. And I'm willing to bet you that Halo Infinite is a Battle Royale game. I'll bet you anything. And they decided not to really show it, because right now, saying you have a Battle Royale game is sort of like the kiss of death. If they had announced the Battle Royale game, they would have been, yeah, whatever, and they would have just shut off. I don't think it's going to be it's not Halo 6. I think Halo Infinite is a multiplayer-only game that's going to be free-to-play that is Battle Royale.
Maybe. It wouldn't be a bad route to go with Halo.
Well, I mean, it's a Windows game, so you have to wonder, you know? It sounds like it might be free-to-play.
Yeah, I can see that.
And, you know, the rec packs in Halo 5 have really done well.
We don't really have much to talk about with it, because it was really only a 15-second trailer or so, but...
Well, I think there was going to be more, and they just didn't, you know.
Yeah, and I mean, that's fine. Take your time. It's a new Halo game. How long has it been since we had, like, a brand new mainline Halo game?
Yeah. So anyways, the one thing we have to talk about now, we're going to stop talking about games, because I don't think anybody cares about PUBG, because we already know PUBG is on Xbox One. It's getting new content, fine, whatever. Sea of Thieves is getting content, fine, whatever. But we have to talk about the acquisitions. Now, Microsoft announced that they acquired or founded 5 new studios. One is The Initiative, which is a brand new Microsoft game development thing. It's going to be in Santa Monica. So the other, most of them are like, yeah, we get it, you know. Yeah, Microsoft acquires Playground Games. Yeah, they're the ones who are making Forza Horizon. Yeah, no big deal. You know, of course they are. They acquire Undead Labs. Yeah, State of Decay. Yeah, of course they're going to acquire that. Compulsion? Yeah, we happy few. But I think one of the biggest holy shits of the entire E3 conference, one that sent reverberations everywhere, was that Microsoft announced they had acquired Ninja Theory.
Yep, Hellblade.
Most notably right now for Hellblade. But Ninja Theory, wow, that was big.
It was definitely the most out of the ordinary announcement. Like, everything else, they had already been working with Microsoft to some degree, so it was sort of a given.
Yeah, I mean, Undead Labs, you know, yeah. Is it a big surprise that Microsoft acquired them?
Mm-hmm. But, like, Ninja Theory was completely out of nowhere. And, you know what? I hope that Ninja Theory still makes games that I can play on PS4, because I like playing their games.
No.
But
it's not going to happen. Here's the thing. It's sort of like, I can't believe I forgot the name of the developers who work with Sony, who make some of their biggest games. Not the third party people who did Sunset Overdrive, because they're definitely multi-platform. But the other, the people who did Jack and Daxter, and I'm trying to remember their names.
Naughty Dog.
What?
Naughty Dog.
Yeah, Naughty Dog. I mean, this is sort of like Microsoft getting Naughty Dog, you know? This is their version of Naughty Dog, Ninja Theory. The ones who are going to make the big AAA game that's firmly in the first party, you know, pocket. You know, the one that I'm, you know, but here's the other thing with Ninja Theory. Microsoft sort of hinted at this. They said, oh, by the way, almost understated, don't be surprised if there's a new console in 2020. And you can bet your bottom dollar that Ninja Theory is making a game for that system. Now, one of the good things is that the way things are going, it's not going to be like if, you know, they're going to be completely, you know, the Xbox One and the Xbox One X are going to be completely left in the dust, because what it seems like they're doing, and what Sony is doing, is that they're just going to make a better version of their current console so that all the old games for, like, the Xbox One will work on it, you know, and all the games for the PlayStation 4 will work on the next Sony platform. But, yeah, I think we're reaching the end of the next console cycle, which to me feels a little short because I picked up an Xbox One X. But the Xbox One has been around since 2013.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, and I know Microsoft wouldn't do this if they didn't think Sony was going to be coming out with their new console too.
Yeah. It's, I was hearing word on the street that it might be called Xbox or something called Codename Scarlet, which... Yeah. How good is Microsoft at coming up with code names that will probably be replaced with something boring?
A lot of people still wanted the Xbox One X to be called Project Scorpio.
Absolutely. My theory is that
let's go play on my Scorpio.
Uh-huh. My theory is that we're going to be calling it Xbox Scarlet for a while, and then it'll finally be revealed as the Xbox One Box.
Right.
Or X-Bob.
So we're going to move away from Microsoft now. Now we're going to go into the press briefing that started it. It was before it, and that's EA's press briefing. And, yeah, they didn't do themselves any favor. The one thing that people came out of from that was, oh, my God, how fucking bad is Command & Conquer Rivals? I mean, I saw so many much negativity about that. They're doing the same thing to Command & Conquer that they did to Dungeon Keeper, and it was sort of like they were pissing on, you know, on Command and Conquer that way.
Yeah, I was when they tried to you know what? I wouldn't have cared if they hadn't tried to drag that thing out and say this is Command and Conquer. It's not. It's not Command and Conquer. It's not that's not what you put out. It doesn't look anything like it. It's a perversion of a dead horse you dragged out just so you could milk cash out of the wallets of people that are still desperate enough to care.
When was the last Command & Conquer game?
It was free-to-play Command & Conquer, and it was garbage.
Yeah, and they also had that disastrous Command & Conquer compilation, too, that was just buggy, which everybody wanted, but it was really lazily done. You know? Do you want to talk about Battlefield 5?
Yeah, we can.
I mean, do you want to talk about it? Because I know you're more invested in the Battlefield series than I am.
I was happy to see them do some some in-world sort of match execution. Because one of the coolest things about Battlefield has always been its destructible environments, and in this particular setup, it reminded me of Bad Company, because Bad Company has had the best.
Yeah, that's the thing that everybody says. When are we fucking getting Bad Company 3?
If we're not getting Bad Company 3 anytime soon, then Battlefield 5 sort of sated my urge for it, or sort of makes me hopeful and optimistic for it, because the environmental destructibility,
the irreverent humor though.
Mm-hmm. But the environmental destruction they were showing off looked really good in that game.
What do you think of the war stories?
I think that's going to be interesting. I think EA and Activision kind of switched places as far as like the way they're carrying out their content this year. EA is just completely dropping the season pass for Battlefield in favor of just like releasing they're going to release war stories and they're going to release content packs that just keep everybody on the same basis with the content of the game. Whereas Activision decided they're going to go with the season pass and it pissed everybody off.
Yeah. Although I was pleasantly surprised by everybody's pleasant surprise about the reaction to Unravel 2. I mean, no one knew it was coming out, and EA comes out and, oh, by the way, you can get it now.
Yeah. Yeah. I never played the first one, and I don't have much to say, but
it's part of the Limbo family, okay? It's going to be a very, what's it called, personal story with a side-scrolling, you know, with a certain mechanic. In this case, you know, wherever he goes, he leaves his yarn, you know, he leaves a yarn trail. I will say this, though. Unravel looked beautiful, and Unravel 2 looks even more beautiful.
Neat. I like the aesthetic of games like that. I like Little Big Planet. I like Yoshi's Woolly World. I like Kirby's Epic Yarn. So, yes, I will.
Yeah, Kirby's Epic Yarn. And this game is about what? Oh, yeah, yarn. Scott, did you play Unravel? Scott?
Mm-hmm.
Did you play Unravel?
Unravel?
That's the one with the yarn. Yarny is the name of the character.
I don't think I've played that one. No, I'm sorry.
Oh, really? Wow. You should. It's about a grandmother's yarn ball coming to life, and basically it collects her memories.
Oh, that does sound nice.
Yeah, and it's maybe also a little beautiful. I mean, the first Unravel has to be like $5 to $10 by now. I mean, this game isn't going to be like $20 to $30. It's not, it's an indie game made by EA, but still.
It sounds odd. An indie game made by EA.
Well, it's like a smaller game, you know, that's intended. It's quote unquote more casual, if you can consider something like Limbo casual. But it's like it's not trying to. It's just a smaller scoped game. It's just it's like an indie movie being being released by Warner Brothers or something.
Well, it's interesting and sorry, I lost my train.
Well, you should check
there.
Out Unravel. I mean,
yeah,
just to check it out because. So, do we want? Let's discuss Anthem now. And I actually got to play a little bit of Anthem. It's smooth. You know what? They showed a little bit of gameplay. And, again, they had that friggin' thing that they do in The Division in which people are chatting like you never chat online. You know? But I will say this, you know, it was a really, really, really smooth battle. Borderlands. It was just basically really smooth Borderlands. That's what I got out of it.
Yeah, it looks good. It looks fun. I like the mech suits. It makes me think of I like the idea of BioWare doing an RPG version of a Titanfall game.
Yeah, here's the problem is that the problem with BioWare is that they're not very good at combat. So to me, it's like BioWare plus shooter equals question mark.
I heard that the movement through like the flying was really good in the game.
Yeah, I mean it's really smooth. I mean It was a thin slice, so they still have 8 months because they announced the release date is February 22nd. They did announce, most pointedly, that there's not going to be any loot boxes. Most of the money that it's going to make is coming from cosmetics.
Mm-hmm. Which is fine. Seeing BioWare lean so hard into an action genre. I know they are capable. I don't know.
They didn't want to make another friggin' RPG. RPG, RPG, RPG. They wanted something different, you know?
Yeah.
You gotta change it up sometime.
And as like artists, that's got to be like a thing. You want to change it up, keep your style fresh, do things that are original. I mean, that's
don't
why
be like Destiny. Don't be boring.
That's why Hideo Kojima had such issues with Konami, is that they pretty much tied him down into a stairs like, you will make Metal Gear Solid until you are dead.
And what annoys me is that, you know, Bungie gets, you know, Microsoft said, Bungie tells Microsoft, well, we don't want to do Halo anymore. And they say, okay, we'll let you go. You can do something for 10 years on your own. And what do they make Destiny, which is basically Halo MMO. Guys, you know, why did you make another Oni? You know, do you remember Oni? That was Bungie's yes. game in which it was a, you know, manga-style action game in which, you know, combined a third-person shooter with a fighting game.
Mm-hmm. You're an anime cop.
Yeah, I mean, and it had an interesting story, you know, what is human, you know? And that was different. And so was the game Myth, you know, which was their real-time strategy game. But, you know, to go from Halo and to do Bungie, Destiny, that did you really want to get away from Halo to do that? Seriously?
Mm-hmm. It's like it's a waste. I mean, it's a waste of a lot of good talent.
Yeah. So, the other thing, I actually got to play the DLC for Star Wars Battlefront. Which is the Han Solo thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I would have liked a lot more if it wasn't so heavily, you know, licensed on the Han Solo movie, because the characters are right out of that movie. It's like, it was like mocking me. I will say I did enjoy the gameplay of the DLC. They added a new gameplay mode, which is basically the cart pushing from Team Fortress 2. And I found I really liked being a sniper in Battlefront. It actually worked well with me, because they also come with a cloaking device if you want. So.
I missed this, and you get to play as Lando?
Yeah. Well, that's some of the new. They get Grievous, you get Dooku, you get Obi-Wan, and you get Anakin as well.
I want to play as Donald Glover Lando.
Not General Grievous? Not with a robot that has six whirling lightsabers?
Do not get me wrong. I love the idea of playing as Grievous. Say what you want about him and how he was sort of useless and got totally destroyed by Obi-Wan. He was still kind of a badass character.
Oh, how about playing as Anakin? I mean, I know if you're playing Anakin, everybody's going to just want to attack you out of... Even your allies will want to attack you.
Give me Asajj Ventress and Ahsoka Tano.
Yeah. So, but that's not the only Star Wars. They also kind of sort of announced Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order, which would be okay, but it's being developed by Respawn. For those of you who don't know who Respawn is.
Titanfall.
Yep. And it'll be interesting to see what they do. Now, they say it's taking place between Episode 3 and Episode 4. But the thing that's frustrating is nothing has been released about it, just the name. But like I said, Respawn plus Star Wars. Now, here's the thing. We did go gaga over Star Wars and DICE getting together, and that was a big meh. But I think part of it was because they were given orders to make it as you know, as casual as possible, and people didn't respond to that. So we're going to have Respawn. And, you know, hey, look, if you make Titanfall with a Star Wars license, fine. We can go for that.
Completely, yeah.
I mean, we haven't seen any mechs. We've seen the AT-STs and the AT-ATs, you know, but we haven't seen actual mechs. So it would be nice to see a Star Wars mech.
Yeah, that does sound crazy and cool.
Yeah. So the final thing that I'm going to talk about is Digital Devolver's show, which was basically meant to take the piss out of... thing. I mean, they announced Scum, which is basically, it makes fun of battle royales by just having, you know, you can be a bear. That's all you need to know about Scum. It's battle royale, but you have the option of being a bear, a humanoid bear.
I knew somebody, one of my colleagues was playing this game, and he said that it was actually like a survival game that he didn't know he wanted, because it was like so out of the ordinary with, like, the whole, like, you're a prisoner and sort of a prison island type setup.
Yeah.
And it really made a lot of – it really broke away from the norm and, like, embraced a sort of weirdness that Devolver is known for.
Yeah, well, speaking of weirdness, let's talk about My Friend Pedro, which is basically
gun ballet.
A ballet violence game in which you're doing ballet while shooting people.
Oh, dear. That's crazy.
It's beautiful in terms of movement, and the weird thing is it's coming out on PC and Nintendo Switch. So, yeah, you finally have your weird-ass violent game on the Switch.
Copious amounts of slow motion.
Oh, Lord. But here's the thing. You know the Switch needs something like that. What was the black and white murder game that they had on the Nintendo Wii U? I forgot its name.
Oh my god.
It needs another one of those games.
Mad World,
right. It needs another Mad World, and that's its Mad World. Except instead of being black and white, it's just a guy doing ballet while shooting people and blowing stuff up. I will say this, it is totally, totally, totally Devolver Digital. It's exactly the sort of game that they would release.
Mm-hmm.
Retro, but not. And I know one of the games that they showed at their show, which probably made your ears prick up, was Metal Wolf Chaos XD, which is being developed by From Software. And it was originally only in Japan. But you know what? Here's the thing. How can you not love a game in which the President of the United States fights an evil Vice President of the United States in giant mechs?
Sounds wonderful to me.
By From Software.
Yes, now, this was that thing that you were talking about where, yes, From Software does things that aren't Dark Souls.
No, that wasn't it. Wait, what? Maybe for you. But, yeah.
Oh, no, I'm just saying that this is a good example that From Software does things that aren't Dark Souls.
Yeah. I also, they didn't show it in the show, but I did get to watch Serious Sam 4 being played. And I will only say this. They have upped the enemy count on one screen in a shooter to tens of thousands of enemies. At the end of the video, you come upon these hills, and you see literally tens of thousands of enemies running at you.
Eat your heart out, Dead Rising.
I mean, It is... This is... Now, here's the thing. The graphic engine isn't, you know, it's their own, you know, their own licensed engine. Their own proprietary engine, and it isn't, like, you know, amazing, but when you have 10,000 people, and it wasn't them, but I can just picture 10,000 of the screaming guys coming at you with their bombs. I want to see that. I want to hear that.
I'm just as interested to see what kind of crazy-ass piracy protection they put in this one.
Yeah, I actually talked to them about it. You know, I asked, are you going to have a pink scorpion? And they actually said that, you know, someone came to them and wanted them to have it so that they, you know, you could speed run with a pink scorpion chasing it to mod the game so that. They said, well, maybe they'll have little girls with machine guns next time. So we'll see. We'll see what kind of copy protection they have. And they laughed about it because they knew that it became a meme. You know, they really enjoyed that. So, did I assign Bethesda over to you, TJ?
I think you said you were going to take that one.
Oh, okay. So, let's talk about the big elephant in the room, and no, not Elder Scrolls 6, because they didn't really say anything about it. They just said, oh, it exists. It's existing.
It exists.
And I know that Scott was very happy about that.
Mm-hmm. Definitely, we can move beyond the... not getting a confirmation. At least now we have confirmation that the game is being worked on, and they'll be releasing it eventually.
By the way, they also announced something called Starfield, which is going to be a new wholly original franchise. Finally, something that isn't Elder Scrolls and isn't Fallout.
I'm really curious as to what they're going to do with it. If it's a first-person adventure game, or is it going to be like a top-down, or like what kind of gameplay are we to be expecting?
Well, here's the thing. Elder Scrolls, fantasy, right? Mm-hmm. Fallout is futuristic, but it's still set in a real world. I wouldn't mind seeing an Elder Scrolls / Fallout type game in space, you know?
Yeah, that's, I mean, that is one possibility, but I think...
It's one possibility, but I...
Yeah.
I think doing that would allow them to actually, you know, have – imagine if they somehow try and attach all worlds, like somehow Elder Scrolls is related to Fallout, which is related to Starfield. I doubt it.
We don't even know, by the way,
if Starfield is the actual name of the game. It may just be a code name.
Mm-hmm. It might be a code name, but it sounds like a good name either way.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know any other Starfields out there.
Right, I don't think they use code names all that much, Bethesda. And I liked Bethesda's show. I thought they really did good. I thought the Alexa Skyrim joke was hilarious and fun, and I'm kind of interested in that Blades mobile game to see if that'll be fun. I think it's free, so that's not so bad, just to try out, see if I like it, and there's probably in-game purchase apps, I'm sure.
So, did you play Alexa Skyrim, Jenna?
What?
Did you play Alexa Skyrim?
No. No. I'm done with the Elder Scrolls. Here's the thing. What do you want from the Elder Scrolls? First, Scott.
I would like them to go to Hammerfall or High Rock, or maybe combine a couple things. The story I would like to see is, what do they do the recent assassination of the emperor, if they go through a, you know, picking out the new emperor kind of process.
Think of the idea that now they have the computing power to actually do something like Daggerfall and have all of Tamriel.
Mm-hmm. That would be awesome.
How about you?
That would be very ambitious.
This is a hard one, because at this point they've done gods. They've done demons. They've done dragons. I haven't seen them really explore that in any meaningful way. They haven't explored the homelands of the Argonians or the Khajiit, so that might be interesting.
Or, you know, what if the Dwemer come back?
Oh yeah, the dwarves. That would be interesting as well. Just like some pocket of them that managed to survive the extinction.
Or maybe they somehow escaped by going into an altered dimension or something like that, and they've decided now is a good time to come back and in full force. Sort of like the Burning Legion in World of Warcraft.
That would be fun too. The thing that I'm concerned about is Skyrim was really cool. Like the way that it used the whole Dragonborn thing and then messed with that whole like dragon voices, and you had a lot of things going on with the Daedric princes and the gods as well.
Now here's the thing that you have to notice though, is that they used the Dovahkiin song and sung about the Dovahkiin, so it sort of tells me that you're still going to have the Dragonborn in the game.
That would be interesting, but I think it's just for me personally. Go with what you haven't explored. Hidden on the Khajiit and hidden on the Argonians. That's kind of what I want to see at this point.
So let's talk about Doom. Doom Eternal.
I really hope that they use this opportunity to explore Doomguy's rabbit. The entire crux of why he hates hell. it's going to be interesting. I think they said something like they were going to have 20 new monsters in this one. Hmm. So that's going to be interesting, because that means that, you know, they went through the entire catalog of Doom monsters in Doom 2016. So 20 new monsters, I'm interested in what form that's going to take.
Well, they did say that they're going to be revealing everything at QuakeCon.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, by the way, on Thursday, August 9th. So it's not too far away.
Yeah. And, I mean, that also means that we're going to get another kick-ass soundtrack, so I'm all for it.
Hey, do you know, maybe they can get Trent Reznor.
The guy that they had doing it is really, really good at what he does. Like, I got in touch with that guy a couple times, and he's top. Mick Gordon is his name, and he's top notch.
Yeah. By the way, speaking of Quake, it's free right now forever if you pick it up right now, until June 17th. So I'm going to be releasing this podcast as soon as possible, at the latest tomorrow. So if you're listening right now, you know, you have until, what is that, Monday? No, Sunday. You have until Sunday to get Quake Champions for free, and you will never have to pay for it.
Yeah, and I mean, it's Quake. It's all the things that you might like about Quake.
I have to couch that, by the way. Right now, the early access version costs $30, and it'll be free. But you can get the early access version for free before it goes free to play with the final game. So if you want to get the early access version free, pick it up before Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I meant to say.
Do you ever look at it and, I don't know, think, man, this makes me want Unreal Tournament to come back?
I was about to say, yeah, I'm more of an Unreal Tournament sort of guy. I've said that many times on this show. So, there was one game I got a lot of hands-on time with, and that's Rage 2.
And oh, yeah? What'd you think?
Hard as fuck.
Oh, yeah?
Thing, you're overpowered, but you really have to do some joystick bending, gamepad bending to get the most out of it, because you have the ground pound, and you have the force push, and you have the rage mode, all this stuff, and you have the, what's that thing that you throw? Like a little boomerang knife. I forgot what they call it in the game. But, yeah, it's fun, and it's basically someone looked at Rage and said, we're going to turn it into Suicide Squad in the best possible way.
I mean, you could just straight up call that little boomerang the trash crawl.
I thought it was interesting that they started out the Bethesda conference with a rock and roll song to introduce this game, and then you go in, and then they go into the game and show you how this last walker guy, Texas Ranger, and he's all pissed off, and I guess he's using his rage as a power, and yeah. Things go all magenta, purple, pink.
Oh yeah, like I said, yeah. This is a lot of crayons, a lot of orange crayons, a lot of pink crayons, a lot of green. Bright green crayons. You know, here's the thing. Great. Now, the it's being developed by Avalanche, and we know best Avalanche from doing Mad Max. And the problem with Mad Max and also with Rage was that they had to be brown. And I know a lot of people loved Mad Max when I was talking to them at E3, but I know that you, TJ, were not enamored of it because it was boring to look at.
Yeah, the problem with having a fucking game set in the desert is that you have to somehow figure out how to make the desert not boring.
And I mean, Fallout 3 did that. I mean, Fallout 3 was based in the desert, but at least it was an interesting desert to look at. And so was Fallout New Vegas.
Yeah.
But
some games don't pull that off.
But in Mad Max, it was grayish brown on grayish brown on grayish brown on grayish brown. It was almost monochromatic. Mm-hmm. And yet, you know, when the storms hit, it was really good to look at. But still, it wore me down. The colors just wore me down. And I hope this doesn't have the opposite effect with Rage 2, in which there's too much colors and I start getting colorblind because there's just too much. But at least it's going to be interesting to look at. And, you know, the first Rage was an interesting flop. You know, not many people latched on to it. It's going to be interesting to see how Rage 2 goes on. Because I saw a lot more positive Rage 2 reactions.
Yeah, I hope that it does well. Because, I mean, the first game wasn't all that spectacular, if I remember correctly. It was
competent. It looked good. A lot of people weren't expecting so much racing. And Rage 2, by the way, I didn't get to do it, but there's going to be a lot of good car stuff, you know. And it better be better than, you know, here's the thing. Whenever there's cars in one of these games, like in Grand Theft Auto or Borderlands or anything, they just suck. The driving in Rage, the original Rage, was actually kind of solid. So we're hoping that Rage 2 will have the same solid driving.
I mean, Rage 2 looks like they took the first game and injected it with a strong strain of Just Cause, which is wonderful. And it makes sense because it's Avalanche Studios as well. And I think that'll make things interesting. If you add enough context and enough activity to make it closer to a Just Cause game, but it's Rage.
Yeah, we're talking about Just Cause a little later.
I think that's the right route to take.
Yeah, let me ask you a question. How happy were you that there was another Wolfenstein game announced? Wolfenstein's Youngblood.
I think that's interesting.
It's taking place in the 80s.
I don't know what kind of conflict they'll do in the 1980s. I guess they're going to have to do a little poetic license there and do like an alternate Earth. But I like the idea of a co-op Wolfenstein. I think that's what they're saying that they're doing. So that looks like it'll be fun.
Well, it's taking place in Nazi-occupied Paris this time. So that, I think that's going to be... And you're going to be aiding the French Resistance. So I think that's going to be the twist on this one, too. That you're finally, you know, because for those of you know history, of course, you know, the French Resistance was very big in Nazi-occupied France.
Well, the 1980s?
No, I mean in real life. You know, so they're really... I mean, yes, there's going to be a fire-breathing Panzerhund, but still, you know. I mean, the DJ, I know you're a big fan of the 2010s Wolfenstein games.
I like Wolfenstein. Yeah, I like all the new ones that have come out. They've been pretty fun, and I like any reason to go back to that. Plus, I thought it was really funny that just like. Really hammer in that 80s style in the first seconds of that trailer. Just
the
like,
other thing, oh, by the way, the other thing that's going to be different about it is you're not going to be playing B.J. Blazkowicz. You're going to play one of his twin daughters, Jessica and Sophia. So you're going to have that difference as well.
Which is great. I think that's neat. But
which
I really
is, by
thought
the way,
it was...
why it's taking place in 1980s, so that they can be adults.
Yeah. I really thought it was funny when they hammered in, this is the 80s, here's a portable tape recorder.
but here's a portable, but they still have people on the moon and in Mars.
Yeah, the Nazis explored the moon and Wolfenstein.
And Mars. In the next one, didn't they?
Mm-hmm. Yes, they have a space station on Venus as well.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, it's... Let's face it, this current Wolfenstein series is just pure camp.
Yeah.
It's a grindhouse World War II game, which is wonderful.
I think it's going to be a fun camp, though.
Now, this might be the last of a trilogy, although the old blood, I don't know where you put that then. So we'll see. I mean, it'd be like I said, I haven't played any of the Wolfenstein games yet. You know, I know a lot about them, but I actually haven't played through them yet. So we'll see. I mean, hopefully they'll have sales on the game. You know, on the previous games in preparation for the third game in the series. So, are we going to talk about the big 6 million pound elephant in the room now? Let's talk about Fallout 76.
Oh, yes. That got quite the reaction. People were really concerned that this would be some massive multiplayer game, but it looks to be like a limited online kind of thing.
Here's the thing. It's always online and multiplayer focused.
Always online. I mean, but limited
but
in
you can
how
play
many
solo,
people
yes.
you're going to be adventuring with. It's not going to be thousands. It's just going to be a couple dozen. You know, so it won't be so overwhelming. It won't be like World of Warcraft where people are bouncing all around you.
I think it's going to be multiplayer the same way that Monster Hunter is multiplayer.
Yeah, I think that makes sense.
What I hope they do is they ditch the friggin' crafting, or at least that make it so that you don't have to stay in one place. Here's the thing: in an open world game where you're supposed to explore, you shouldn't be stuck to one spot of it trying to improve your little settlement. Or if you do it, just have one settlement. That's it. No other settlements. Just one. Just let us worry about one. And make it in the center of the map so that it's sort of like a hub.
I didn't mind the crafting in Fallout 4, but I think this one...
Oh, really? Do you really want Preston coming up to you and saying, hey, guess what? We have another settlement that's that we want to Liberator is
under
attack.
Different, that's the quest line crap. The whole questing, the Radiant quest lines, that needs to be fixed, and that's a whole separate issue from the crafting itself. I mean, you can leave and go to a different settlement and not go back to Sanctuary. Just leave Preston there and never talk to him again. That's, or send Preston elsewhere even and just use Sanctuary or whatever place you want to. I don't know how many settlements you'll have, if it's going to be multiple or not, but I really do like the idea of working as a group with other people to rebuild your settlement and go off questing. And it, you know, we just haven't seen quite enough of it yet to know how it's going to work out. But I like the new monsters. I really loved that giant bat dragon. People are calling it the
American dragon. You know what? Right now, we should just explain where it takes place. So Fallout 76 takes place before all of the other Fallout games, and it takes place in West Virginia, close to the capital city. So you have that going for it. And as a matter of fact, the trailer had, you know, of course they had, oh, God, I can't believe I forgot it. Bob Denver. Not Bob Denver. Mm-hmm. That's Gilligan. John Denver. John Denver talking about Old Country Home. So So it's a new sort of, well, it is a new location, although, you know, it is near Washington, D.C., and that's the entire point of it. And a lot of it is like, do you want to go after, you know, so... What do you think of the setting of having it early in the Fallout timeline?
I think it's interesting because it gives me the thought that we could be doing the origin story of the Enclave, how they came about.
The Enclave?
Because...
Or how about the Brotherhood of Steel?
Yeah. I mean, that seems to be what's happening here. Is they rebuild, and then after they've rebuilt and made a stable settlement, they can work out to... go out conquering the other places, and there's the Greenbrier apparently, and some people have made theories that there's some political leaders, you know, in a vault there. I don't know how many vaults there'll be in this game if we start cracking them open and getting more people in, and then what do you do with those nukes that apparently you have access to get loot drops, apparently.
I hope we get to kill Arthur Maxson's parents. So, how about you, TJ? Your impressions?
It's going to be a weird thing stepping away from the single-player experience and Fallout to this...
Well, it is a single-player experience if you want. I mean, I don't know how much they're going to stress the, you know, the multiplayer or the co-op.
So I heard Todd Howard say a lot even though it's always online, you could do this solo if you wanted. And I wonder if there's going to be a solo offline mode.
Not going to be offline. It's going to be playable solo, but not offline.
That's,
and you know, here's the thing. Bethesda has the balls to talk about having an online-only game that requires an online connection, because Ubisoft caught holy hell for it, and Microsoft... fumbled the ball when they first said that the Xbox One was going to be always online as well. I mean, that's the entire reason why the PlayStation 4 got a huge jump start on it. That, and also that they were going to force people to buy Kinect with it. You know, but that, he has some brass balls saying, we're going to have this only online only. I want to see what happens when he has to deal with the inevitable people are, you know, have an internet outage and can't play.
Well, the other thing, I have a one of my writers at Twin Galaxies is a West Virginia native.
Oh, yeah. Here's the thing. Tourism has gone up in West Virginia since this announcement.
Right. But the issue with that, with Fallout 76 being an always online game, is that internet infrastructure is shit in West Virginia.
And it's not the only place. I mean, the Midwest as well. You know, there's places where they rely on satellite for their broadband, which sucks.
And I didn't even think – he wrote an op-ed for us about how it sucks that people in West Virginia aren't going to be able to play a game set in West Virginia and because they decided that they were going to make this always online.
We'll see how long it stays always online.
And I didn't even think about that until he pointed out to me, like, if I was in a place where I didn't have good internet and they made a game entirely based on my hometown, I'd be kind of upset. I would be kind of down in the dumps about that. That would suck. Plus, I know I have a whole bunch of friends that live out in rural area that are just not going to be able to play this game to the full extent that it can be played.
And they won't even be able to fire a nuclear missile at anybody.
How weird is that? How weird is that, that Fallout went from nuclear missiles ruined everything?
Well, here's the thing, but that's entirely the point. We're taking place earlier in the timeline, and people are going to pay for being new cappy hotheads.
Yeah. I'm just saying, how weird is it that they went from nuclear missiles ruined everything to nukes are now a bonus for you to kill your friends.
Tell that to the children of the atom. Come on. Oh, holy bomb. So, you know, we should mention that Fallout Shelter is finally coming to Switch and PS4. That was announced. Not a biggie. And it's fun. You know, I burned out on Fallout Shelter, but if you want a nice little management game, you could do worse. And we're not going to talk about Elder Scrolls Blades and Elder Scrolls Legends. I mean,
I already did, so.
Legends is a digital card game, and from what I understand, for people who actually play it, say it's really, really, really good. CCGs are not my thing, though.
But, I'm not too much into the card games either, but the Blades, I'll check out.
Yeah, Blades is an iOS game. I think it's mobile. I only played it on iPad, and you know, it's good for it. It has really good graphics for a mobile game.
So, yeah, I noticed that.
So, anyways, we're gonna move on to the Sony conference. So take it away, TJ.
How weird was that whole setup from the distance? Like,
it was very weird, very surreal.
So,
well, like I said, you know, here's the thing. Remember when we were talking about Devil May Cry 5 last week, and everybody assumed, and they were talking about how Sony was going to announce it at their conference, and Microsoft announces it. That had to just throw Sony for a little spin there.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like they were going for a crazy aesthetic thing and whatever, that's neat and all, but it failed. It simply failed. They tried to put it together an appointment or on the floor show experience and a live press briefing. And that's what where the disconnect was, is that that doesn't work for a live press briefing. For me and Scott and everybody else watching, my entire staff at Dwayne Galaxies are like, what the fuck are we looking at? Like, what is going on here?
I thought that was what is going on when they showed Death Stranding. That was bonkers.
That whole game, I don't know what's going on with that game. You're like traveling a delivery guy, and then, oh wait, now we're dealing with ghosts and invisible monsters and some woman that we don't know what is or whatever. And then they had all the weirdest thing that weirded me out were these little clips, these 1 second or 2 second clips where a skeleton is playing a note on a piano or tooting his horn. I'm like, what is that? Why are we having this? I don't understand. I mean, the game looks great, and they did a great job making the actors look like the actors.
We're talking about Death Stranding, right?
Right, Death Stranding. And I don't know what the hell the baby is about. It sounded like the guy could blow himself up and then reclone or something. I don't know what the heck this game is.
Here's the thing. You know, CNET, in their summary, the first 6 words of their recap of Death Stranding at the Sony's conference was, where do I even start? Jesus wept.
I mean, I liked Spider-Man. I thought that was interesting, at least.
But yeah, TJ, tell us about Spider-Man, a.k.a. Spidey Arkham Asylum.
Yeah, so we got to see a little bit more of the Spider-Man game reveal. We got to see some combat. We got to see a little bit more of story. He goes up against Shocker, who is in a really weird costume this time out. But
what was with the white spider, and also the white on his shoes?
Oh, it's just a new costume.
Like, but it made him look like a Star Spangled Spider.
I think the idea was that they're going for that look where he is joined up with Stark, and Stark is making his outfits at this particular part of the canon.
Yeah.
Oh, God. You know, Civil War, just go away. Can't stand that story in the comics or the movie.
Yeah, but this was a part of Spider-Man Homecoming, and that really, like, for what it's worth, that was actually pretty good. I like Homecoming a lot.
Yeah, here's the problem I have, is that I really wish they would stop synergizing movies and comic books and stuff like that, you know, where they have to change it just to reflect the movies. Just, you know, let Harley Quinn wear a friggin' Harlequin outfit.
I don't mind his suit. I think it's slick.
Okay, I just thought it looked weird. It just colored weird.
Plus, there's going to be like four different Spider-Man suits, so if you don't like it, just change it.
So let's talk about the action now. I mean, it's the reason why people are calling it Arkham Asylum at warp speed.
Yeah, so it did have a lot of that sort of action-packed combat, the similar style that we've seen to a lot of the Arkham games, where you punch, 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 dodge, punch, punch, dodge. a little bit of technique here and there, some web-slinging abilities. I like that.
But they said it was a bit too fast.
Yeah.
It was a little bit better paced than some of the other games that they showed. Not this one, Sony, but I think the Quake looked a little bit too frantic, and Rage was definitely way too frantic. This, I could tell what the action was going on. I could follow it along. I could see myself playing this and not getting lost or feeling just overwhelmed. So I don't think it was too fast, but I do see the Arkham Asylum thing, because you are going to a jail, and like four of the villains escape and are attacking Spider-Man.
Yeah.
How cool was it that they
Rhino,
showed off just
Vulture?
It's pretty much all the Sinister Six.
Yeah. Well, Sinister Four.
Sinister Six. It was Shocker, Rhino, Vulture, Scorpion. Then they went with Mr. Negative, but which I don't know why they went with Mr. Negative. And then we haven't seen the sixth one yet.
I want to bet Mr. Negative is in there because he's going to be in the movies.
That would make sense, because Mr. Negative is a fairly new character from what my friends were telling me.
Okay.
Yeah, I'd never seen him before. That was weird.
Do you want to talk about Neo 2?
I'd rather talk about Ghosts of Tsushima.
Okay, yes. Let's talk about Ghosts of Tsushima. Go ahead.
So this is a jam from Sucker Punch, who are the folks behind Infamous and Infamous 2. Oh God, what was that game that was on Xbox that was bonkers? We were just talking about it recently, where it was about the energy drink that turns everybody into zombies.
Oh, yeah, Sunset Overdrive, yeah.
Yes. I love Sucker Punch. I love what they do with their games, and I'm interested and the one-on-one combat in that game looked ridiculous.
Well, wait. Let's pause for a moment. Let's talk about the setting. This is about... it's a samurai game that's taking place during the Mongol invasion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you had you basically had a samurai fighting against barbarians, and then you had a showdown between that guy and a spear wielder, and the whole thing looked just stylish as holy hell. It's the year of samurai games for E3.
Yeah, they had new DLC for Honor too.
I liked. Mm-hmm. The Ghost game looks like a very technical sword fighting game, and not just hack and slash and smash the buttons. You have to
It's actually closer to Dark Souls than the other game that we were talking
about. No, I'll tell you what it's close to. It's close to Bushido Blade.
Yes, I was thinking that.
I never played it, so I don't have a frame of reference.
Bushido Blade was a game where, like, it's a fighting game. It's a 3D fighting game, but you can only take, like, one hit and then you die because you're fighting with swords. And so there's a lot of style. There's a lot of stance changes and style and all sorts of just technical aspects to it that, like, you want to make sure that you don't mess up.
Yeah, because you can get taken down really quick. And I do remember being able to be wounded. Like, you can, if you're hit in a certain way, you can survive.
It was so disheartening. Like, you would see your character, like, missing a hand in the next cutscene.
Yeah, it was crazy. So that's what this kind of looks like. It looks like very technical, very well thought out. You're not just button mashing. You're, like I said, planning movements, and it looks great.
Let me ask you a question. Are you as excited for the Resident Evil 2 remake as everybody else was around me at E3?
Absolutely. For a minute there, I thought it was, when I saw that it was going back to the third person perspective, I thought it was going to be more like Resident Evil 6, and I had a little bit of dread. But then I learned that it's actually built in the Resident Evil 7 engine, which is great. But yes, I'm excited to see. This was rumored for a long time. It was rumored back when I was still working at a Game Watcher.
Yeah,
and then to see it finally, to see them finally put footage out for the game is fantastic. I thought, and when they were going from the mouse perspective, I was like, oh, this is going to be a PSVR game about surviving a grocery store as a mouse. And then they bust into the zombies, and everything goes crazy. And I'm like, oh! I lost my mind when finally Leon showed up. Babyface Leon with his dumb, weird, awkward conversational phrases. Like, I really kind of hope that they improve the dialogue a bit, but I also kind of have a secret hope that they go just as cheesy as the early Resident Evil games were.
Yeah.
Don't shoot! I'm a human!
So, as big a surprise that Insomniac was making Sunset Overdrive, Remedy is making a game for the PlayStation 4 called Control.
That's right, it's Insomniac. I kept saying Sucker Punch. I don't know why. Anyways, Control. That was kind of out of the blue. I don't know what to think of it yet.
It's sort of similar in aesthetic to Quantum Break. You know, I mean, but remember, Remedy's also the people who brought us Max Payne.
They also brought us Alan Wake. So they have a good track record.
Yeah, but it's all with Microsoft. See, that was the odd thing that people. It was like Insomniac making Sunset Overdrive for the Xbox One.
I just don't know enough about it to make an informed opinion yet. It looks like it could be typical Remedy. It looks like it could be fun. It didn't wow me, I guess.
Just another Quantum Break.
I don't know. The geometric gun was weird to me. I don't. I can't say that I found it all that eye catching, I guess.
Right. So we're gonna move on to another conference. There was another conference that I covered that I forgot to talk about. So let's talk about the PC Gaming Show. And we're gonna talk about the one game that just brought. There are two of them actually. I'm sorry. There are two games that brought down the house. But the first one, no one was expecting, and that was, it was an open-world shark game called, what was it called again?
Maneater.
Manhunt, yeah. So, I mean, the entire place went nuts. It was just bizarre and weird in all the good ways.
Yeah. You get to play as the shark, and you get to hunt humans and jump out of the water and bite them.
But here, it was you playing the shark, sort of in the Sharknado mode, in which you're doing ridiculous stuff.
Yeah.
You know, they did this once in the past.
Oh, yeah, Jaws.
Jaws Unleashed.
Yeah.
And that game was bonkers as well, and I'm happy to see somebody try this again, because it's such an odd concept, but it is also something very fun.
Yeah. Now, the other game that brought down the house and was totally out of left field was, of course, finally, there's a game based on Cyanide and Happiness, and it's called Rapture Rejects. And people were not expecting the first Cyanide and Happiness game to be a battle royale game, but on the other hand, it's a top-down game. And that sort of takes this thing out of a lot of battle royale games, because a lot of them are frustrating when you're playing as in a first-person or third-person shooter. It's less frustrating when everything is top-down. So it also had the funniest trailer of the entire E3. Did you see the trailer?
Yeah, I watched the whole thing. I thought it was funny, cute.
Are you a fan of Cyanide and Happiness, TJ, Scott?
Not really.
I have the card game.
Oh, so do I. It's Joking Hazard? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I do like it, and I have it signed by the creators. I like them.
So everybody expected that if you have a Cyanide and Happiness game, it's going to be like an adventure game, like a Telltale style adventure game. No one was expecting a battle royale game. So
I guess that sort of makes sense when you think about it. I guess, but the games I was interested in were Satisfactory.
Oh yeah, Satisfactory. So that game is here's the thing. It's sort of like Fortress Craft, in which you're building a gigantic factory.
Yeah, but it's in third person, and you're up close to everything, so you could see how everything's working, how everything's connected. Because with like Factorio, you're all top down and bird's eye view, so you're not really in the building. You know,
if I play that, how I'm ever going to be able to keep track of anything. That game just looks like it gets complicated and complicated and complicated and even more complicated.
It's definitely going to be complicated. I liked this one, the gaming PC gaming conference, because they just were like bam bam bam, you know, here's the next game, here's where you get more information, here's the creators.
Last year, or at least two years ago, they had the developers come up and talk about their games at length. This time it seemed like they were just going quicker, and there was no swag this time, TJ, so you didn't miss anything if you'd gone.
Swag at PC Gaming Show last year wasn't that great either. It was
the year before that.
I think it was very boring, wasn't it? It was just very, I don't know, they just didn't have any energy. This year they had energy.
That's all it needed.
Yeah. They had two very good, lively hosts that just kept you engaged, you know? Yeah. And I listened to every single game, even if I didn't particularly like that game. I was like, okay, this is interesting, or at least they're presenting it in a mode that kept me engaged to at least see what the game was about. Like, I liked Forgotten City, Forgotten City.
Okay, so let's talk about Forgotten City for a moment. That was it's actually a game that's based on a Skyrim mod.
Was that what that was? Okay.
Yeah, it was based on a Skyrim mod. You didn't know that?
I didn't know what the mod was. It just said, here's this famous mod. I'm like, what mod? Mod for what? And it wouldn't say. So it's for Skyrim. Okay, that makes sense.
Get the Forgotten City, from the Nexus. You know, download that mod right now.
Yeah, they didn't say what. Okay, so that now I understand.
It's but a beautiful game, by the way. It's getting a audiovisual makeover. So it's actually based on a Skyrim mod.
Okay then. And then there was Sinking City.
Actually demoed. So Sinking City is yet another Lovecraft game. Here's the thing. I actually went to check out Call of Cthulhu again, and they had different stuff there. But then I went to see Sinking City, and that one is as much of a detective game as Call of Cthulhu. And the thing about that one is that part of the city is going underwater because Cthulhu's coming, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And you have fish people and all this stuff. So yeah, it's if you had your fill of Call of Cthulhu, guess what? The Sinking City is there too, and you know, it can use it didn't look great graphically when I was playing it, but you know, there's plenty of time to fix that.
Man, Focus Home Interactive is coming correct with these choice-driven supernatural games. we didn't talk about what we're playing on this episode, but I'm just gonna say I've been playing Vampyr. Vampyr, yes. Mm-hmm. I've been enjoying it a lot. It's really fun. Me and Samantha
have
been.
For those who weren't here last year, we demoed Vampyr at E3. And he came out, TJ came out saying it was his game of show, and that's the game he was looking most forward to.
Yes. This was the game that I've been saying for the last couple of weeks that if it sucked, my heart would be broken and I would just go to sleep until 2019 comes.
Well, it doesn't
suck. So I don't have to go to sleep until 2019 comes.
Let's talk about Sega at the PC gaming show now. Sega decided they're bringing all their old games to PC now. Shinryu 1 and 2, Puyo Puyo Tetris, Shining Resistance Refrain, Valkyria Chronicles Yakuza. 4, and of course two Yakuza games, Yakuza Kiwami and Yakuza 0. And Yakuza 0 makes me chuckle because it makes me think of Yahtzee's review of it, in which it told the origin of a story of serious-minded men with bricks for faces who disco stomp people. And there he was in the trailer, disco stomping people. So yeah, what do you think of Shenmue 1 and 2 coming to PC?
I think, why aren't they working on Shenmue 3?
Shenmue 3.
They need a little bit extra money, so that's how they get it.
I'll finally be able to see the magic that is Yakuza.
Oh.
Or Yakuza 0, anyway. You want to talk about Morningstar?
I was looking up Shining Residence to see what that is, and it is a part of my favorite video game series in the history of video game series.
Shining Residence, yeah. You didn't... Come on.
I didn't know. I thought that... You said it, and I was like, could it be? And I had to go look it up really quick just to be sure. This was a Japan-only title.
Yeah.
Yes, I will play the hell out of that because I love Shining Force. I love Shining Force 2. Those were the games that informed my entire love of fantasy fiction and writing. And I will totally jump back into that series.
Okay. I want to talk about Neo Cab because that also interested me. It's one of those games which is basically you're a cab driver. And it's sort of like a cab driving version of Papers, Please, in which you get people in and the story is told by the people who are in your cab and you have decisions to make, you know. Or it's also maybe more like that cyberpunk bartending game, Valkyrie, I think it's called. I don't know. So anyways, let's move on to the next. Who else did I have you cover, TJ? Sony and...
Ubisoft.
Ubisoft. Let's talk about Ubi! Let's talk about Assassin's Creed Odyssey, which we talked about maybe coming last... And they admitted, yes, there is going to be an Assassin's Creed Odyssey. So, yeah. So your impressions from the show. And I was there on the floor, and I can give you my impressions on that, too.
Okay, so first off... Okay, so the choices look cool. The ability to choose between male and female protagonists look cool. It looks like it's going to be quite a bit more involved than a lot of other Assassin's Creed games have been, and I think that's neat.
Here's the thing. I did not like Assassin's Creed Origins because it was just sluggish and all that stuff. From what I've seen on the gameplay floor, it seems a lot smoother and less sluggish. I mean, by the way, you still have the bird spotting out your targets again, as you did in Origins, which is a nice little mechanic.
Was interesting, and they're taking, I think, if I'm, yeah, they're taking a different route where you can choose between two characters, and I guess both of them are like the ancestor of your current character or something, or did. Whatever that guy's name is. I don't play the series, so I don't know
Miles
his name.
Miles Desmond?
Desmond, yeah, there we go.
Desmond Miles, I'm sorry. Why did I call him? Miles Desmond sounds nicer.
It does.
Although it actually makes him sound more like a jazz musician.
If your first name is Desmond, you have at least a 75% chance of being a James Bond villain.
But here's the thing, it's like they... He's an American and he's named Desmond. He doesn't have a British accent.
Yeah. I do gotta address one of the biggest things I noticed right off the bat with Assassin's Creed Odyssey. It looks cool. It looks like it's gonna be fun, but it also looks like they're moving further and further away from Assassin's Creed.
Forward to Assassin's Creed 4 Black Flag because your base of operations is that ship. And all the combat in it is just taken straight out of Black Flag.
Right. And what I'm getting at is it's less assassin-y and more straight up chop a dude in the face that sees you coming from a mile away. There's not really much assassining with when you are definitely just dueling a guy and stab him to death.
And just going into battle, into straight up war battle and fighting enemies all around you. It's not, you know, it's like the whole point I thought of Assassin's Creed was to be avoiding that kind of stuff. And,
oh, you know, being an assassin.
Yeah, an assassin. So, I don't know, maybe it'll happen later on. I don't know. We'll have to see with this one. But it looks gorgeous. That's definitely for sure.
Mm-hmm.
You want to talk about
Star Wars? Guess you couldn't just get away with just calling it Odyssey because the Assassin's Creed franchise is the Assassin's Creed franchise.
Mm-hmm.
People buy it on the name alone. I get it. Here's the thing.
The first Assassin's Creed came out 10 years ago, and how many Assassin's Creeds have there been? Like 13 of them?
Including
like the smaller games like Assassin's Creed India and Assassin's Creed China?
Yeah, there have been at least six mainline games, I think, and then at least five more spin-offs.
No, it was yearly except for the 1 year they had those two games, so I think it's 11 games in 10 years.
Yeah, it's like they're just trying to make an Assassin's Creed in a different setting each time.
Well, okay, to be fair, the Assassin's Creed 2 sequels, I think it was Revelations and... what was the other one? Anyways, those were actually really, really good, and it was Assassin's Creed 3 where things started to wilt a bit. And then it was propped up by Assassin's Creed 4 because he got to be a pirate.
Oh my god.
That was a really good part of it, anyway. When you're on land, it was dull. But when you're on the ship, hey.
20 at Odyssey. Odyssey is the 20th Assassin's Creed
game.
Holy
crap, really? I did not realize.
I just counted them.
Jesus Christ. 2 a year? Really?
It actually beat Final Fantasy. Holy crap.
Let's talk about Starlink. Let's talk about Star Fox being published by Ubisoft, of all people.
Man, Ubisoft is making the connections with Nintendo, aren't they?
And it was announced by Shigeru Miyamoto, no less.
What are you doing, Nintendo? What are you doing?
Well, to be fair, it's Toys to Life. But yeah, tell us about Starlink, Battle for Atlas, DJ.
I missed it, but I want to know more about it. But I looked away for a second because I was writing something about Beyond Good and Evil 2 at the time. But
yeah.
I heard Star Fox in this game, which, you know what? It's not Star Fox Racing, and that disappoints me.
Oh.
But I am okay to see some new Star Fox in a new game. I want to know more about what this is going to be. And it's interesting in 2018 that somebody is trying another Toys to Life thing. Like,
it's cute.
Will it succeed? Who knows?
Well, here's the thing. You know, Toys for Life worked with Skylanders, and which is basically a Spyro property. And, oh, by the way, you know, Spyro was on the show floor where Crash Bandicoot, it was in the same place that Crash Bandicoot was last year. But, you know, Spyro worked. And I think maybe the same thinking is that Spyro worked so Star Fox could work. Because who doesn't like furry animals for Toys to Life?
Mm-hmm. And you know what? I'll take it. I'll take a new Toys to Life R-Wing on my desk. I like the designs of the other ships that they've showed for it too. So I'm interested to see how this plays out. I think it's bold for somebody to go for another Toys to Life franchise this late in the game.
Yeah. You don't have to talk about Just Dance, okay? We can skip that, and we can talk about...
Dude, you didn't care for that for that opening to the conference?
It's not that I didn't care. It's just more of the same. It has 40 brand new songs. That's it.
Okay, but Dancing Panda was pretty slick.
Yeah, but let's talk about Rainbow Six Siege. And they were talking about how it had 35 million players now.
Yes. How cool is that? Like,
For those who don't know TJ, he was around since day one of Rainbow Six Siege. So he's one of the players who stuck with it through its lean first year.
Yep. I didn't listen to any of the hate for it. I stayed with it because I could see from the ground up that they were building this thing into something that was going to be awesome. Like, at the time, Overwatch was happening, and
so was Battleborn.
Battleborn was happening. And Rainbow Six Siege was a different take on that. It was a Rainbow Six realistic-based setup where you had the similar thing, where you had all these operatives that do very different things from one another. And I'm so happy to see how well it's done. I'm thrilled to see that the esports scene has taken off. They have an entire roadmap for 2018 and 2019 for the esports.
Let's talk about that. You want to talk about Parabellum?
Parabellum is the newest. It's going to be the newest setup for that, and I'm there. It feels like Rainbow Six puts more effort into their DLC than most of the people I see for having what over 10 different DLC packs at this point.
Well, here's the thing. Remember, Rainbow Six Siege came out of Rainbow Six Patriots, and it was Ubisoft deciding they were going to dump the single-player campaign, or at least single-player with co-op elements, and they took a look at the esports thing and said, you know what, we want some of that. And they decided to make Rainbow Six Siege specifically to be esports, and they went all in. And you know what? One of two things could have happened in the first year of Rainbow Six Siege. They could either said, you know, this isn't working out, we'll just cancel it. You know, it's not going to work out. Or they could say, you know what? We're going to hammer this until we have a good esports game that people will want to do esports with.
Yeah.
And they did the latter.
And with Parabellum, they're coming up on 40 operators. So yeah, you have a lot of options. You have a lot of options as far as who you want to play and how you want to play them. There's so many different ways to like make a good composition in this game between like shield people, defensive people, explosive experts, electronics experts, because reconnaissance is a huge thing in this game.
And I know you're really happy about pick and ban. I'm willing to bet you you're ecstatic about that.
Yeah, because it made sense early in the series to not have that because there were so few operatives to choose from. Now, when you've got 20 on defense and 20 on offense, you've got people that know who they're weak against. They know who causes the most problems for them. You've got like people that are going to ban Thatcher or mute every time. You've got people that are going to get rid of certain high meta players.
Just explain the brief concept of pick and ban. You know, it's a very simple concept, but.
So you basically get – in certain setups, you get to choose a couple of your characters, but you also ban certain operatives from outright from play. So in League of Legends, this was like if you knew that your enemy was going to be playing a certain type of champion, or you knew that they were going to play a champ, or you particularly identified a champion that was a serious problem for you, you just ban that champion, and then they can't choose it. For Rainbow Six Siege, what that means is that, like, say you don't want somebody to be able to break down fortified structures, so you put a full out ban on Thermite, who is able to blow up reinforced walls, and then you get rid of that aspect altogether. But you have to choose, like, you have to figure out who's going to be the biggest problem for you and how do you deal with that. And it really creates an extra metagame where you're trying to figure out how to keep your enemy players from playing to the best of their ability. I love it. I love where they've gone with this. I love the way that things are going. And Rainbow Six Siege has always been doing it right with their DLC. You can buy it outright. You can spend $5 on a DLC pack and get the characters and just have them. Or you can just build up your currency in the game and then get the operatives that way. And then if you feel like it, spend some money on cosmetic stuff. You don't have to buy anything. And the maps have never been purchasable. You just get them.
So let's move on. Scott, let's talk about Nintendo's conference. And I know you immediately, you know, of all the things, I'm willing to bet you, okay, I'm going to make this guess. Of all the things that they announced, the thing that you were most interested in was Xenoblade Chronicles 2.
Yeah, I probably have to agree with that. That or the Fire Emblem game. Both of them look like
cool. Oh, I forgot they did the Fire Emblem Three Houses, yeah. But, yeah. Okay, pick one to start with.
Okay, I'll go with Fire Emblem Three Houses. It looks like a, it's kind of reminding me of Suikoden, where you have these three houses, and I guess these three kingdoms, and you're having to fight. I'm not sure what the story is, but there's this, I guess a goddess, I want to say. Again, I'm going by what the trailer showed. And
well, wait, before you move on, just do a brief, tell people what Fire Emblem is, because it's a long-running RPG series.
Yes, it's a very long-running RPG series. It's a tactical one, kind of like Final Fantasy Tactics, where you have characters that are on a grid and you fight, and also from what I've been told is that these characters can die permanently, and that affects your story if they, you know, no longer can be partaking in it, but the story continues anyways. So you can lose people. And so, yeah, it's a squad-based tactical game. And again, I haven't really seen too much of the story. I haven't played them, but I'm really interested in this one.
Well, since here's it'll the be thing. On Switch. Yeah, because here's the thing. This is the first time that Fire Emblem's been on a console since 2007. After that, it was all handhelds.
Yeah. So I'm definitely looking forward to this, and I don't know. I guess the story continues through all of them. I hope so. I mean, but there was this lady talking about trying to prove to her teacher that she could make him proud and I guess save the world. I think that's what she's trying to do, and. Yeah, they showed a lot of the combat. It's like as you do the action and then suddenly they're fighting. And and I think it's cel-shaded graphics.
Yeah, they have some cel-shaded in it, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it's just a beautiful, fun-looking game. And
it sort of looks like Zelda, Breath of the Wild-ish.
Yeah, a little. I guess
I mean the game, not the cutscenes.
Right. Well, again, there's a lot of tactics based. Oh, and yeah, I guess you do walk around the environment, so there is that. And it's huge castles. Characters look great, look interesting. Definitely like the UI, the user interface looks good. So, yeah, that looks like a game I'm interested in, definitely.
So you have the expansion to Xenoblade Chronicles 2, Torn of the Golden Country, which I was talking about before.
Mm-hmm.
And aren't you a fan of Xenoblade?
I saw it. I didn't get the chance to play it. I think that was a Wii U game, I think.
Oh, it's a
Xenoblade. What, the first one was Wii U. The second one.
No, I mean Xenoblade
Switch.
Chronicles 2 is Switch, isn't it?
Right, mm-hmm. Switch. But the first one, I didn't get a chance to play that one because I never got a Wii U. Okay. Yeah, I only had the Wii, not the Wii U. So I didn't get a chance to play that, but I saw it and it was, you know, I definitely want to play more RPGs, so I'll definitely look forward to playing this. I'm getting more and more reasons to get a Switch. Yeah.
How about a Super Smash Bros. Ultimate, which is going to include every single fighter that's ever been in the, they're taking characters from the first Nintendo 64 game.
Yeah, all of them are in there, and I really wasn't interested until the very end when they showed Ridley killing Mario and Mega Man, and I'm like, I get to play a Space Dragon? Yes! Sign me up for that.
I pointed this out in my Twitter feed as it was happening. It's like, what a great way to introduce your new Smash Bros. Character is to have him kill two beloved characters from the Nintendo universe. Mm-hmm. Children screaming while their dads are just like, shut up, child, this is for me.
What, you don't want to kill Inkling?
No, but I'm just like the violentness of, with the way that they portrayed.
Or you can kill him. Actually, kill him with Bayonetta. That'll.
But like in context, in a cutscene, no less. Yeah. Ridley stabbing Mega Man through the chest with his tail.
Yeah, and Mario and
And mashing Mario's face in his giant Ridley hand.
But wait, didn't you get that certain throw when Snake did it?
So. That was all in
Snake
games.
Snake is butchering Luigi. Come on.
I mean, that was all in-game, though, so it was all fun, and they all came back later. With this one, the trailer ends with Mario's hat on the floor and Mario just gone.
Oh, by the way, yeah, the Mario that's in Super Smash Bros. Ultimate is the one from Odyssey. So his hat, I forgot the name of his hat. Cappy. So Cappy's in the game now.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, and Link is, by the way, dressed as he is in Breath of the Wild.
I thought they should, yeah, that's right, he was.
Here's a good thing, Scott, though. You know, it doesn't come out until December 7th, so at least you have plenty of time to get a Switch.
Oh, yeah, definitely plenty of time. I will endeavor to get one, because there's so many games I need to be playing.
So do you care about Super Mario Party?
Not particularly, but it looks nice, and if I have a bunch of people to play with, which I usually don't, so it's not really a whole lot of motivation to get it, but it does look like a nice party game, which is what it's meant to be.
I'm ready to hit my friends all over again.
There you go.
Okay, I'm pretty sure TJ loved Daemon X Machina.
That was out of the ordinary and neat. I, of course, love anything mech, so I don't know what that game is going to play like. Like, it looks like it could be a bullet hole shooter.
Daemon X Machina is a cel-shaded mech action game in which you're fighting other mechs.
Cool. I'll take it.
Wait, I remember you getting really excited over, was it Guilty Gear? A new Guilty Gear? Or...
Recently, Konami announced that they're going to re-explore the Zone of the Enders, the second one, runner, as a VR game, which sounds neat.
Oh, okay. No, I just... okay, so what else were you going to cover, Scott?
Did I try to cover? There is a new Pokemon Go.
Yes, yeah, Pokemon Go, Pikachu and Eevee.
Mm-hmm. And
we'll talk about it, damn it.
Okay, I'm trying. I'm looking at the pictures, and graphics look great. And I mean, it's a Pokemon game. I've never played Pokemon, but it looks like you and Eevee, I guess. I don't know if she's a character from before or not. I don't think she is, actually.
It looks like a Pokemon that's brown with a tuft around its head.
Where is it? Oh yeah, I see that little. I guess he's Pokemon. Again, I don't know these features.
I just don't know why they didn't do a new Pokemon Go. You know, an actual Pokemon Go.
I mean, this is going to be basically an interlinked Pokemon Go, but it's going to be like a light new game based off of the Pokemon Yellow.
People have been wanting a new Pokemon game, and I think that's what they're doing. Yeah, and this one, you can, I believe you can play against your friends, or you can hook up with your friends over the Switch and go hunt Pokemon together. I think that's
what's new. And you can download Pokemon You Catch and Pokemon Go into your Let's Go party. So
there you go. Yeah. So that's definitely.
It's a $30 game, and it costs $30, so. You know.
Yeah,
it won't be coming out until 2019, but from what I understand, it's a $30 game.
I think Pokemon players will be happy with this, I think.
Yeah, Let's Go is sort of just like it's the appetizer before the main course that's going to come late in 2019, which is going to be a brand new Pokemon game.
Yeah.
I think more people were ecstatic that Hollow Knight Adventure is now available on the eShop than that Pokemon game.
I'm not going to lie, I'm pretty happy about that.
Well, let's see. Can I get on Steam? Because if I can get it on Steam, I don't care.
You can.
Then I don't care.
Yeah, but you see, TJ needs a reason to own a Switch.
I understand.
I like Hollow Knight, and I'm happy that people will be able to play it more on more systems, and I'm happy that they'll be able to play it on the go, because it's a really pretty game.
Yeah, and the company gets more money, and they can make even better games.
How about Killer Queen?
Or even more.
Killer Queen Black is going to be super interesting because a lot of people that I know play that game love it because it's an arcade experience. You have two separate arcade setups that both host five people, and kind of the camaraderie of playing that game is what makes it so great. And so I wonder if it's going to be able to, I'm of course cool with it being on other systems. I love the idea of the game because it's Super Joust. It's Joust with Super Mario Brothers Arcade. But I'm interested to see how that's going to translate over to a console system where you don't get to you don't have to stand next to five people.
Right. Now, there's two games that we haven't mentioned yet. Because I did the thing for so what were your impressions of Cyberpunk 2077?
Before we get there, we should do we even need to go over Square Enix or was that?
Yeah. Oh yeah, I forgot about... Squeenix. Yes, let's talk about Squeenix. Let's talk about Squeenix.
I'm not sure why you're saying that, but anyways.
Well, it's the way people, you know, they just combine the Square and the Enix and call it Squeenix. Okay.
All right. Well, Square Enix is making Dragon's Quest XI, which of course I have to get and I will be getting.
Guess you played it today.
Right, you said you did.
Yes, I did. So here's the thing about that: they only gave us 15 minutes, which is sort of like saying you only have 15 minutes with Elder Scrolls. Go. And there's two choices. Now, most people chose the thing in which you have a full party and you're battling a boss. I did not. I chose to be in the village that you start with, and I made a beeline for the castle because what I did was I wanted to see the character interaction and talking to townspeople and seeing. And I will say this, it is absolutely beautiful. It is gorgeous.
They've come a long way with this cel shading art and... I forgot the artist's name. I don't want to mess it up.
Akira Toriyama.
Thank you. I love his art style. It really does well with these characters. And I feel like I'm coming back to the Dragon's Quests that I remember as a child.
With the slimes? I always giggle when I see the slimes. They're so out of, you know, you have all this wonder, and then you have the slime, which is basically a water drop with a smile on it.
Yeah, it's a weird little
monster.
And
by the way, that's from Enix. That's from Enix because they had there was a game I loved to play. That was by Enix, not Square Enix, but Enix, called Monster Hunter Rancher.
Yes, I remember
this. Or was it Dragon Hunter Rancher?
Monster Hunter Rancher.
It was their version of Pokemon.
You had to use CDs to find your monsters.
It's just called Monster Rancher.
One I played actually was called Dragon Monster Rancher or something like that. It had dragon in the title. But it was like, you know, so that was my Pokemon. Here's the thing about Pokemon. And this is, by the way, I'm not excited about Detroit, David Cage's new game, because it's sort of like, yeah, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. I'm not going to. It's the same way with me and Pokemon. I get the next Pokemon hoping it would be different, and oh, it's the same Pokemon. Oh, and their big difference this time is you have two Pokemon. Wow. You know, they have not evolved the Pokemon series. But Monster Rancher, that was a breath of fresh air for me. I really enjoyed that a lot more than Pokemon.
It was a really unique way to do it, is you find these CDs, and I don't know if it's random or what I never found out how they give you the monsters from these CDs, but it always seemed to be the same monster whenever you put that CD in. So I don't know if there was a bit of data that they look for to tag what you get. So I don't know if you could create your own CD to get that specific monster or not. But it was a really cool concept. I enjoyed that mechanic.
I think I played an earlier game than that with the CDs. I think I had the regular monster breeding in my game, game that I played on. I think it was on the DS.
His mind was blown by how short Square Enix was. I feel like I blinked and it was over.
Well, yeah. We already talked about Shadow of the Tomb Raider. Do you want to talk about
there's Octopath.
Yeah, I'm ready for that. I'm ready for that game to come out. I am so into it. It's the Saga Frontier game that we need in 2018.
Yes. That one, the art style is so much Final Fantasy. It's like Final Fantasy grew up and it married Saga Frontier and it had a baby and they called it Octopath Traveler. You know, and like this, that's the second reason I want to get a Switch, the first being Breath of the Wild.
Do you care about the crossover between Final Fantasy 14 and Monster Hunter?
Yes,
it's neat.
I saw that. It looks neat, yes. It's cute.
So I want to step into the Quiet Man really quick because there was a lot of confusion about what this is. Like,
it's a deaf man. I mean, you have a deaf hero, which is great. I mean, you have a handicapped hero.
Everything that I've seen about it points to the idea that it's a successor to the Bouncer. I don't know if anyone knows what the Bouncer is. It's a very early PS2 game. It's an RPG brawler, an RPG beat-em-up from Square Enix. And everybody that I've talked to has been saying that The Quiet Man is a successor to that, which makes it even more interesting. I wish they had sort of pointed that out in the trailer, because you really didn't get that much out of it.
Here's the thing. The Bouncer... Oh God. You've seen the artwork for The Bouncer, right?
Yes.
Could not be more different. The Quiet
Yes.
Man has as realistic, and the Bouncer looks like every JRPG threw up on somebody.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, you know, but it's nice to have a deaf hero. I mean, we have Daredevil, who's a blind hero. Why not a deaf hero? Here's the thing. I wonder if they're going to go run with it and have it so you can't hear anything.
Yeah,
that would be more immersive. Yeah, you would understand the difficulties maybe better. That's intriguing if they did that. Or maybe you just do it yourself, just turn down the volume.
Yeah. So do you want to talk about Platinum's game, Babylon's Fall?
Yeah, that looked interesting. It was kind of reminding me, mostly because of the art style of Dark Souls, only, again, because of the art style. and then you have these two big knights fighting at the end. It's like, I don't know how you can't see that. I mean, how you wouldn't jump to that. It just, like, and I liked how they're showing these clips of history that's happening with this fall, and there's this disease, and then I guess an angel comes at some point and saves them. And,
yes, it's a Platinum Games game. These are the same people who made Nier Automata, and they made, they make all the Vanquish, and they make Bayonetta. Yeah, these are the weirdos. But it does have a time aspect to it, time travel sort of thing.
Oh, I didn't think it was weird, just interesting, and I was kind of curious to see.
Interesting is Weird's brother. Younger brother. I thought it was weird, but in a good way.
It's also Lord of the Rings kind of way. Like, if you were saying, okay, this happened, and then this, and then this, and then this, and then now here's our current conflict because of all these things we just summarized for you real quickly. That might be an odd way to introduce a game. But I think they're trying to build lore very quickly and then give you the conflict. But of course, we don't see the gameplay. We just see this nice cinematic fight, and then we'll have to wait for more information to know if it's a good game or not, I guess.
Yeah. So let's talk about some games that I actually did play. Now, let's talk about first Cyberpunk 2077, which wowed the socks off of everybody. And they also proved that it's not The Witcher in the future. No. This is actually a first-person game. And this is... So, TJ, what did you think?
Cyberpunk 2077 looks fabulous. I'm so ready to jump back into that gritty sort of world. And I was interested to hear that it's a first-person game instead of a third-person game.
Yeah, it's first-person.
Game.
It's, you know... Here's the thing, is that Cyberpunk has been around since the, I think, mid to late 80s. For those who don't know, it was created by Mike Pondsmith, who created El Talsorian Games. He was also the only African-American geek that anybody could think of in the 80s, to tell you the truth. He was, you know, he's very influential. You should look up El Talsorian Games, and you'll see a lot of games that you say, oh, wait, he did that? You know. So Cyberpunk's been around for a while. They keep changing the years because we keep on getting closer. I think it was like Cyberpunk 2027, you know, when it first came out. No, we can't do that because 2027 isn't that far away now, you know.
Yeah.
So the entire conceit about Cyberpunk is that getting augments makes you go nuts. It makes you go batshit crazy. Because you start losing your humanity. Sort of reminds me of Vampire the Masquerade in that, by the way.
That actually reminds me of Shadowrun, where the more tech you got, the less...
Well, you know, Shadowrun and Cyberpunk are very heavily connected. You know, Shadowrun, the difference between Shadowrun and Cyberpunk is Shadowrun is that all the mystical creatures come back. You have orcs, goblins, dragons, all those
Pretty big difference
in a Cyberpunk situation. While Cyberpunk is just, you know... People are cyberpunk.
Yeah, so that's a pretty big difference to me then. But Cyberpunk looks pretty crazy, and I'm kind of interested to see if it's just a gun-twitching first-person shooter or if there's more story, more involvement, more choices.
Here's the thing. You know how big The Witcher 3 is, right? Well, Cyberpunk is reportedly 3 times as big. And one thing about CD Projekt Red... is that they don't skimp on story. So it's not going to be... It's probably... I'm hoping... I'm pretty sure it's not going to be a Mass Effect Andromeda situation with them, and you'll actually have stories that build upon... Because, TJ, you tell us how good their side quests are for The Witcher.
There's an entire quest in... You know what? I couldn't even begin. There's so many good ones in Witcher 3. There's a straight-up quest where you go in and help solve a relationship dispute in which it turns out one of them is a werewolf. And you have to figure out whether or not to...
Here's the thing, though. What I'm getting at is how they incorporate the side quests into the game.
You just completely walk across them. You can't walk 5 feet off a road without bumping into a side quest in Witcher 3.
And it's not like, you know, here's the thing. It's not like they hit you over the head, side quest here. No, it's more organic.
Yeah, it's more like, hey there, mister, would you like to stop for a side quest?
So no exclamation marks or question marks sitting on the mini-map or trail breadcrumbs or anything like that.
Mm-hmm. They also have probably the best facial animation of any RPG, too.
My favorite was the girl that was putting on makeup before she put on her mouth. Priorities. Hashtag priorities.
Now, we do have to say that Cyberpunk 2077 was announced like 5 to 6 years ago. So this has been cooking for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
That is impressive.
And from what everybody's been telling me, like it doesn't play like Witcher 3. It plays like the best parts of Deus Ex. It plays like a very good mix of Grand Theft Auto. The driving is tight. The RPG is great, and everyone that was playing the game out there couldn't say enough to speak to how good it felt to play that game.
The demo for it was extremely hard to get into, and also was an hour long. And here, TJ knows, to have a demo that's an hour long at E3, the amount of chunk of time that takes up, you know, it's a lot.
Yeah, it's impressive. They came to the like everybody's been like asking, what the hell is this going to be? What's it going to look like? Is this going to be Shadowfall, or is it going to be Witcher with Cyberpunk instead? And they came correct. They came to the table with a lot to show for it.
And you know, the thing is that, you know, at some point you get sick of a type of game that you're doing. You know, we talked about this early in this podcast at 2.5 hours ago. The thing is that, you know, CD Projekt Red said, we're going to make a RPG, but we're going to make a new RPG, and we're going to make it differently so that we can, you know, we can feel like we're doing something different, you know? I think it's going to be a monster. It certainly seems like it.
Yeah, this is going to... I expect that once this launches, it's going to take up the rest of a year. Because that's the way that Witcher 3 was. I still haven't gotten through Witcher 3 and all of its DLC.
Yeah, I was about to say, by the way, there's also going to be DLC for this. You know there's going to be DLC, so you're going to make a massive game even huger.
And not for lack of trying. I tried to get through Witcher 3, but there is a lot of Witcher 3.
Yeah, I'm wondering, you know, how much time in terms of lifespan of this game it's going to be. Like, if it's going to be a three-year game, 4-year game, 5-year game. Because, you know, they're going to feed that game DLC, you know, hand over fist.
Did you see the shade that they threw at Deus Ex Mankind Divided in their trailer?
Yes, yes.
If you didn't see it, Scott, there's a spot in the boot up for the Cyberpunk trailer, mm-hmm. where it straight up says microtransactions ? In a single player game? Are you kidding?
Oh, you know what? Wasteland 2 did that as well with the scorpion. I was like, you can buy the scorpion. No, just kidding. We wouldn't do that to you.
Yeah. So the other game that I played, and the one that I said on Twitter when they asked me if I wanted to demo it, my response was, yes, fuck, yes, yes, fuck, yes, fuck. I got to play Metro Exodus.
And what did you think?
It was an early build, but it looked great. And it's an open world game this time. And it really does well. Now, here's the thing I learned quickly, because I didn't – you know me – I didn't play that many of the Metro games, but I'm going to tell you something. You better fucking conserve your ammunition, because when you lose your – I ran out of ammo, and they don't plop down ammo everywhere. Either you have to get back to your central hub, which is the train engine, at least in the demo I have, or you're just going to have to use your fists, and by the way, you're going to be dead. It also did stealth very well. Which is, you know, the ammo scarcity means that you better start looking for alternatives to firing your gun in the game. And also, you know, when you do that, when you take people out physically, you actually keep them alive, and the game recognizes that you're being pacifistic, and some of the dialogue changes depending on what you do.
Oh, cool.
So, yeah, it looks gorgeous, obviously, because that's the thing that they were really pumping with the Xbox One. And, like, it's an early build, so there were some glitches, you know, in terms of gameplay. But, you know, it looks really, really good, and I think it's going to be you know, it's different enough from Metro 2033, from what I played, you know, that it's going to attract new people.
So, Did you mean...
It isn't as good as Cyberpunk 2077. I don't think any game was as good, except for maybe, of course, the Shark RPG. Because here's the thing. Remember when I said Crackdown 3 could beat anything? Because does your game have Terry Crews? No. Well then, guess what? Crackdown 3. No. Now it's going to be, oh, you know, Maneater. Oh, does your game have you playing as a shark eating people? No. Well, this game wins then. So unless Cyberpunk 2077 has an option for you to become a shark. No, I'm kidding, of course. Cyberpunk 2077 is my game of show, which sort of hurts me because I usually like to look at, you know, games that don't get as much attention to give game a show. But come on, there's no other option, really. I mean, there's some good games that I played. Metro Exodus was really, really nice, you know, and I think it's gonna do well, but Cyberpunk 2077 is a beast. It is gonna be the new Mass Effect.
That's awesome. Did you meet Nuclear Bear in the build?
No, unfortunately, no. There's a lot of things I didn't meet, in the, you know, but yeah, I mean, there were games that bored me, like, you know, the new Tomb Raider game. They're making the same game three times in a row, and there were some that surprised me. I mean, in the Indiecade, they had this game which is only 30 minutes, but check this out: you play a communist USSR greeting card guy. In a company whose job it is to send out cards to people, greeting cards, like your father's birthday or someone's being late, you know, someone's moving to a new job or stuff like that. And it's just steeped in, it's sort of like Papers, Please, except your greeting card thing. And I told the developer, listen, you know, you got to expand this. You got to make this into a full game. Because it is addicting, because you have to decide what kind of card you're going to send them. and how they react is based on the card you send them. Can you see how much possibility there is in a game in which you play a Soviet card sender for a company, in which it's your job to send out greeting cards to people in Soviet Russia? You know, no one thought something like Papers, Please could be great, but I think if they expand it, come on, how can you not love it? It also has the same style of graphics as Papers, Please 2, sort of that 16-bit blocky PC-type graphics. So, yeah. So, TJ, what game from afar, unfortunately, impressed you the most?
Oh, geez.
And
come back to me on this. I'll need to think.
Well, let me ask you a question. What did you think of Jump Force?
I think it's neat for fans of Shonen Jump, but it's not going to be my jam as far as what I play.
So you're still going to be loyal to Dragon Fighter Z, Gen Fighter Z.
Blaze Blue Cross Tag Battle just came out, so I've been playing the heck out of that now.
I think it's I think TJ is hinting at how everybody likes their own kind of game, and so saying a game wins is just your
no,
you're,
just the
you're
one
saying,
that you're looking most forward to. It.
Oh no,
you know,
I was just trying to think of
show.
I was legitimately trying to think of what game impressed me the most because there were so many this year.
Yeah,
I
doesn't want to
I
say
agree.
Cyberpunk
so
2077 because I said it.
I just feel like I'm gonna forget some, and you know, it's like I want to play that Ghost of Shinumi and Sekiro, and I don't want to forget them. I also want to get Octopath and of course Dragon's Quest, and I would love to play Satisfactory. Oh, there's so many, you know.
Here's the thing.
Okay,
I'm going to answer for you. Or how much are you looking forward to Dragon Quest XI?
Very much. I think that's the number one game that I want to get.
I will tell you right now, Scott, you will not be disappointed. As a matter of fact,
excellent.
I think it'll exceed your expectations because it was that good. And I really like Dragon Quest IX, which was on the DS.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, Dragon Quest XI really impressed me. And I have only played, like I said, only one of the series. If this was like Dragon Quest 1, you know, the first game in the series, I would still be very, very impressed. So coming from someone who doesn't have an emotional attachment to the Dragon Quest series, I thought it was really, really, really good.
I'm glad to hear it. That's good.
And visually, it's a marvel. You're going to love it. But here's the thing. It has the graphics in which if you see something far off, you can get to it. You know, those, you know, the...
Oh, good.
Yeah. The same thing, by the way, with Serious Sam 4, except there's no point to do it except just to do it, just to go off the rails of a linear game. It's just, I'm going to go over there now. And they said they did it just to be different, you know, just to do something that's completely stupid and idiotic in a good way. Like, oh, yes, it's a linear path, but you know what? I'm going to go a couple of miles down this way. And it isn't an endless desert. You know, it's actually, they said that it goes miles and miles before you actually reach a border.
Well,
so it's sort of like you can have the option of just quitting the game and going off on your own.
How cool is the feeling of when just like you bust into a Dragon Quest game and that title music hits?
Yeah,
the music was great too. I forgot to mention.
Ba, 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 ba.
I will say that playing the same chord over and over and over again started to gnaw at me a little bit. At least it changed when you reached the palace. Oh, one thing is you can ride a horse, and you can you can ride it full gallop, and if you do, you just knock the wandering monsters on their ass.
That is fun.
Fight them.
I saw
go,
that.
Bang! Get out of my
fun.
Way.
Yeah, I do like that.
That's a good way to circumvent random encounters.
I mean, yeah, it's like I want to, or just I'm gonna get on my horse and just bop them out of the way.
Okay, so I know. I'm not sure if it's going to be my game or show, but the one that definitely caught my attention and made me pop and get excited the most was probably Resident Evil 2 Remake, just because I'd heard the rumors and I didn't know it was, and I'd heard some thoughts that it was going to happen.
That were announced, that was the one that excited people the most at the show floor.
Yeah, because Resident Evil 2 is easily the best story and environment out of the series. Claire and Leon's journey is just a ridiculously good one. And to see them go back to that and give it the kind of treatment they gave to, because seeing them giving the original Resident Evil the treatment that they gave for the HD remake on GameCube and PS4, that was really awesome. And so it's really cool to see them take what they had from way, way back in the day and bring it up to speed. I am super thrilled to see both the trailer and some of the gameplay that I saw for that game.
Yeah, I will say that the lines were longest for Kingdom Hearts 3, Dragon Quest 11, which is why I had to go this morning, because I knew if I did not, it would say, okay, we're filled up for the rest of the day, two hours into to the day. And I really wanted to get the stuff they were giving away for playing Dragon Quest 11, so that, you know, because I knew you'd like it.
Thank you.
And also, I think that Super Smash well Brothers Ultimate. Those are the three most popular games. Not mine, but I'm just saying, and the show as a whole, those are the games. And Fallout 76 was almost impossible to get into.
I heard that Pokemon Let's Go had a 4-hour line all day long.
I wouldn't know. I wasn't really paying attention to Pokemon. Pokemon's. Yeah, I mean, it was ridiculous. Having you know, the paid customers coming in. Although I will say, you know, there were paid customers, there were actually people who were selling stuff, and I managed to get myself a really nice mouse that would normally cost $90 for $25.
Nice.
So, yeah. Nice. They also had keyboards for $10, which were the really high-end ones. I guess people, they considered if you're paying $150 or whatever it is to get in, they might as well give you a break.
I guess so. Wow.
Oh, there was also a Switch projector in which you could project the Switch graphics onto the wall. Really pricey, but a lot of people were interested in it. And I think, you know, people would probably take this to their hotel rooms and not even bother hooking the Switch up to the TV, just against the white wall, and just play their games on it. So, go ahead, TJ. I know you're about to say something.
Yeah, so I think people are starting to see that. I saw this from my colleagues a lot with all the lines. And it's like, it's simple. It's a simple fact that unless you have an appointment for games these days, like especially the popular ones, it's just so hard to get to them. And
you know, if I didn't have my friend Sean, who now works at Bethesda, I would not have been able to do anything.
Yeah. And I think it really speaks to the fact that you just, E3, you gotta give like the press a day. You gotta figure out,
or at least make it 4 days. Here's the problem, though: that would require them to pay LA more money.
Or just do the same amount
of the people who paid to get in.
Or just do the same amount of time, but like give 1 day to the press and 2 days to the 2 days to the public.
Well, even when it was that, it was almost impossible to get into anyway. I mean, because you had industry people who are from GameStop, wink, wink. You know, they need another day. I mean, Gamescom is, 4 or 5 days now. You know, you need more time. And I'm going to tell you something. Microsoft did not help things. You know, Microsoft did a lot of things right, but having to leave the conference, go through another, wait 15 to 20 minutes or even 45 minutes. I saw the signs there. They have these little things. If it lines at this, then it's going to be a 45-minute wait, 30-minute wait, 15-minute wait. I waited 15 minutes to get in, just to go through another security check. And, you know, it was like I was only going to be able to be at Microsoft for, like, a couple of hours. And I had to, you know, it wasn't like I could, in the past in which I can just go back to Microsoft and come back, go back. No, I had to leave the conference just to do it. It's just no. And all to save money, you know?
Yeah. I mean, E3 needs to fix itself up. This is the second year they've done the public thing. They have a lot of kinks to work out, but I wonder if they even see them as kinks.
No, like, they. Here's the thing. Almost immediately, they started checking my. They checked my ID along with so, and I figured it out, and it was later confirmed that people were starting to scalp those tickets. By the way, there is one thing I did that had nothing to do with computers, sort of, kind of. I met with White Wolf. and I talked to him about the fifth edition of Vampire the Masquerade, which is coming back. So, yeah. And they're going to be – here's the coolest part. They're going to be sending me a PDF of the entire manual for the game, and they're going to get my feedback on it. And, you know, here's the thing is that, you know, they were very pleased that I knew exactly what they were talking about because I was very familiar with the World of Darkness. Like you know, so does it – should I feel bad that I'm that I prefer to be a Ventru? And the guy said, what? And he pointed to his pin. It was a Ventru pin. I didn't even notice it. So yeah, for those of you who missed the Malkavians and the and all that stuff, and they're coming back with the classic World of Darkness Vampire the Masquerade. By the way, there's an $800 edition of it in which the books are binded by hand in Europe. Can you imagine paying $800 for some source books with all the extra stuff, but still, I wish I was rich just to do that. So, either of you, you know, I know you probably played Vampire the Masquerade Bloodlines, but are you familiar with the World of Darkness?
Yes.
Okay. Do you do the other ones like Werewolf the Apocalypse or Meiji Ascension or?
I have looked into Werewolf. I haven't played it, but I have looked extensively into Werewolf the Apocalypse.
By the way, yeah, I heard the werewolves are OP.
Well, you know what's funny is that I talked to them and they said, yeah, a lot of people who buy our books don't actually play the game. They just love reading the text and the
the lore of it is really awesome.
They do love their world building, and it's pretty impressive how far into it they get.
Yes.
But anyways, like I said, that's the good news. Now here's the thing: they also hinted, if this is successful, and I'm thinking, I would like this. By the way. They were purchased by CCP, World of Darkness. White Wolf, was purchased by CCP because they were interested in doing a World of Darkness MMO. And then, CCP just let them go. So now they're restarting everything with World of Darkness, which is great. But I do hope we get another Vampire the Masquerade Bloodlines type game because I still play that. I still play it. And I always play a Malk because they know everything that happens in the game before it happens. So... You're gonna comment? Come on, tell us how much you want to hear. You want another RPG set in the world of World of Darkness?
That would be pretty sweet. I mean,
that's kind of what Focus Home Interactive's whole jam is right now, isn't it? Between Vampyr, Call of Cthulhu, they have
Cthulhu. What are you talking about? That's the Lovecraftian stuff.
I know, but they're also doing a Werewolf the Apocalypse game.
Oh, okay.
I talked to him about that, and it was still very, very early in conceptual design when I chatted with him.
Talk to these guys that I spoke to because they own the entire license, so they're probably farming it out.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, let's resurrect the World of Darkness, man. I mean, it's like, here's the thing: D&D, Call of Cthulhu, and GURPS, and Champions, Champions, all, hogged the spotlight when it came to pen and paper. But World of Darkness was that cool cousin, that you didn't hear much about, but there's a lot of people who are into it, It's nice to have it make a return, and I hope it makes a triumphant return, too. Anyways. So that was E3 this year. If we forgot any of the games that you wanted to hear about, just let us know in the comments section. What was your general impression of what was shown this year, Scott?
Like I said earlier, that there was a lot of good games, a lot of crazy looking games. I'm very impressed with. I think there's something from everyone that I like. So I think all the developers have done a good job. Well, I guess EA. I don't. Really care.
Well, EA stumbled a bit, but I don't think they were really all that concerned. I mean, the one thing that was that people just went ew was the Command and Conquer thing. Everything else was sort of like okay, and some good stuff. I mean, Unravel 2 just got a lot of positive attention. And like I said, you know, if you haven't tried Unravel, try it out. It's really gorgeous, if only for the visuals.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, so my impressions is that there are some good games that are coming, and I think Bethesda, for me, was my favorite conference. I think I was entertained.
Oh, come on. I could sum it up in three words. Elder Scrolls 6.
I want that power armor helmet, though. I kind of want that special edition Fallout 76.
Yeah, that looks
a lot cooler. Yeah, the XM51, was it 8?
I have the Fallout 4 Pip-Boy, so I need to complete my look.
Oh, yeah. You know, that special edition was sold out in like 2 hours after it was announced.
That was so ridiculous, yeah.
They just snapped it up. I mean, I would have gotten it just for the glow-in-the-dark map.
Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah, I love... Todd Howard, my God, that man knows how to sell games. He just comes on and he has the charisma to just convince you that everything he's selling you need to buy.
That guy needed a better entrance music and a video on the Titantron.
Yeah.
How about you, TJ? What was your overall impression of the show this year?
I kind of love the in-between years of console releases when nobody is trying to release a new technology and everyone is just focused entirely on games. There was a lot of just like game after game after game this year, and granted, we're not going to see a lot of it until late 2018, early 2019, but the future looks bright. It's going to be an awesome 2018, 2019. It's going to be in it. And even after that, things are looking great. There's a lot of stuff that's going to be even further in the future that looks like it's going to be pretty great.
Yep.
Okay. I'll just say Shark RPG, and I'll leave it at that.
fair enough.
Microsoft came out strong and just hit a home run with their conference, which they needed to do, obviously. But there was, you know, there was so much good feeling in this. I mean, here's the thing. I was beaten down by the conference, by the way. Last 2 days, I came home at 5 p.m., and I actually fell asleep until 9 p.m. I just fell flat asleep.
This was my team at Twin Galaxies' maiden voyage on our coverage of E3, and we did well. I'm proud of them. And
this is my 16th year, and I was just drained, unlike any year before.
Yeah. After I was done with, like, most of our coverage, I just passed the hell out. Tomorrow is the first day I get off in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
So, 'cause I was at DreamHack Austin before last weekend, so it's been a long run. But I'm happy with what came of E3, and I'll hopefully be there the next year.
Yeah, because, you know, here's the thing. I want to give a shout-out to the people at Devolver Digital, because they were my go-to every single day. In the afternoon, I would go to their thing. I would sit down. I would get smoked sausages and hot brats, and you know, which were all free. And you know, it was like I would just chill out. And the entire Spider-Man dev team was there on the first day. And there were other, you know, it's sort of like I'm thinking, yeah, the dev team's nowhere to go. They know where to go when they need the time off from the show floor. Devolver Digital is the un-E3. And it was nice. There are three kids who are sons of the people who work at Devolver Digital who are just playing these Enter the Gungeon and what was the other? Oh, yeah, Broforce. And, you know, it just reminded me of what video games were about because they were just having a ball, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't thinking about this developer did this or that. No, they were playing these retro-style games and just enjoying the shit out of them. Mm-hmm. And also that ape game. I forgot what it's called. The one in which you play an ape and you're going around beating people to death.
Well, I mean, E3, I hope they had a good year for presentations and games. But yeah. I hope they realize the problems. I hope they figure... I hope they continue to keep esports, and I hope they let people that want to play games and come in from the public get in there.
The one thing we didn't talk about was esports at E3, and I'm going to tell you something. Yeah, there was... It was an
entire
section. I don't
want to talk about it. I've been talking about it for 5 days.
And here's the thing, is that it was packed with people. on some occasions, you know. I mean, the esports for Super Smash Bros., the professional one, was, like, just crazy. There was just so many people watching that.
Yeah. And the Fortnite Pro-Am was a huge thing, too. They had over two million people watching that.
Yeah, by the way, we didn't mention that Fortnite's on Switch now, but Fortnite's on Switch now.
Yeah. The sensation continues.
Yeah. And I believe they're announcing a new... I think they announced a new version of Fortnite. New gameplay mode. But yeah, I mean, you know what? It was nice seeing all the love for... See, I don't play it, but I know TJ plays it. But all the love that was being shown to Rainbow Six Siege at the show today as well. I mean, it didn't have a big spot, but there was, like, so many devoted people there. Just, you know... It was like... It was like when TJ met Xavier last year. It's like they saw him, his eyes just widen and freeze.
Yeah.
So anyways, look for our show notes at gamingpodcast.net, along with industry news and our gaming history articles. We enjoy feedback, so leave us comments at our blog at gamingpodcast.net. Also, hit us up at facebook.com/gamingpodcast. Subscribe to us on iTunes, leave us some iTunes comments. This is our massive 3-hour show, and we were supposed to talk about Tron. We're going to do that next week.
Sure.
Yeah,
because here's the thing: TJ has some definite opinions about Tron and Tron Legacy, which he has to be shouted down on. And by the way, I cut an hour of content from last week's podcast that is arguing about a bunch of stuff. You know, so at some point we're gonna have an outtakes episode of us discussing that stuff. You can find me on Twitter at Jonah Falcon.
You can find me at Johnny Chugs.
And you can find me at Alpha Shark.
Yes, and this is the triple stuffed podcast that only we could do on E3. Next week will hopefully be a regular sized podcast. But you know what? It's E3 and we had to do it. And you know, here's the thing, Scott, I think you would just love E3. You would be the one who is, you know, because you're going to see your favorite game there, and you're going to be the one who's sampling something like Dragon Quest XI, you know.
Yeah, it does sound really cool. I'll have to try going some year, take time off work or something.
Mm-hmm. But we will see you next week.
Happy gaming, everyone.
Play games, have fun, take care, y'all.